Hello, everyone, and welcome to our insulin resistance practitioner training, Q&A, live Q&A call, what else do we do? Case study call. Yay. I have a whole bunch of people who have submitted. We have four actual case studies. Two of them had a bunch of labs with them and two of them did not. So I'm excited to share those with you and see what we can do to walk through some of what's going on there. And the purpose of these calls is to have you just ask whatever questions, get coaching on particular clients that you're working with. And also, if you've got particular labs that you've submitted, obviously not during the call, but we asked for those in advance, but four people did do that. So I'm going to start with, I don't see any questions. Let me just look real quick. I see one question typed in advance, and I'll answer that. Margo, I do have your case, so if you're on the call, let me know in some way, and best to be on the voice call so that we can chat and I can ask you questions about what's been going on for you. Actually, that's the only way we're going to really be able to do it, because yours is pretty complicated, and I do have lots of questions that I want to walk through. So the thing is, if you do submit cases, you need to plan to be on where I can talk to you. Because as you work with people, you realize that you can't work from just a piece of paper and know enough about the person. You get them to tell you as much as they can, but that's always going to raise questions for you. And the power of questions is the most important piece of getting a comprehensive history. So I saw two of the people we have cases for. I saw Janine and Nora. The other two I have them for are Margo and Denise. So I don't see Denise or Margo, but Margo might be on one of these that I don't know. So if you're on the telephone and you're either Margo or Denise, go ahead and raise your hand so I know that you're there. I do see Janine and Nora, though. I was going to do Margo's first because it was the first one to come in. But again, if Margo's not on the line, I'm not going to do hers first. And I see Laura and Shonda on the Zoom. I've got both open. So if you go, and we're going to use both. So just to give you a heads up, if you go back to the email that you got an hour before this call started, it said if there's going to be screen shared, this is where it's going to be. And there was a Zoom link, or it was actually a link. I don't know that you know it was a Zoom link, but you click that. And you can go to that and you can get on and watch. If you don't care about watching screen shares, then no worries. You don't have to do that. And Lynn, if you don't mind just putting it into the chat, like copy paste it from the email, so they have that link to get in if they, in case they can't find their email or, well, if they're on the phone there, I can do it anyway. Yes, for the Zoom. So people.
Okay, Margo is here and she says she does not have a microphone. So, are you only, can you call in, Margo?
Yeah, I would say to call in because it's going to be really hard because it's a complicated case. In order for everybody to get the most out of it, including her, I have a ton of questions, and it's going to be not so easy to go back and forth because of dialogue. I want to really simulate what we'd be doing right in an environment where it's a real client. Not that you're not.
So, Margo, to call in, Margo, on the center part of the screen, you see where it says phone, web call, broadcast. Click on select for the phone, and it will give you the phone number and the call in information.
Okay. All right. So before we start with that, I'm going to look at, Margo did submit one question, which I could answer. And if anybody else has a question, go ahead and type it in the Q&A or raise your hand. And then we'll go through that, and then we'll turn our attention to the cases, because the cases will take a little bit of time. Margo says, is there timing for taking supplements? Yes. And it depends on what supplements and what you're taking them for. And it especially depends on what's going on in your body. Do supplements count as eating food? I don't generally count them as eating food when I, for example, and I talk about eating just three meals and not eating in between, because actually some supplements do need to be taken on an empty stomach. Certainly enzymes that are taken for inflammation, proteolytic enzymes usually, protein digesting enzymes, those are best taken in between meals. So no, I don't usually count supplements as food unless your supplement is like a protein powder, with a bunch of herbs, and it's more like a food. Then I would say, yeah, like a green powder with protein powder, et cetera. If it has calories, pretty much it's counted as food, although some supplements might have, you know, a handful of calories, so that doesn't really count. And should they only be – yeah, so I think I answered that. So, yeah, they vary a lot. So, of course, digestive enzymes you're going to take with your meals. Certain vitamins and minerals are best taken with meals, like fat-soluble vitamins best taken with a meal that contains fat. So your body is stimulated to produce – lipase and bile to help digest the fat, and that helps to absorb those. And then I like to take probiotics on an empty stomach. Some people like to take it shortly after a meal. Very few people recommend taking them with the meal, because you do tend to get more potency out of them if your body isn't in the middle of digesting a big meal. Certainly bile salts and HCL are taken with the meal, proteolytic enzymes in between. And I find that certain minerals, especially liquid ionic minerals, like, you know, zinc and selenium and whatever else you might be taking in liquid ionic form, I find work best first thing in the morning, like half hour before eating, or sometime about a half an hour before eating. So I hope that answers. I don't know if you had particular ones in mind, because I know you had a big, long list. Let's see if there's any others. I don't see any other hands up. And... that number is slightly off the number she has. It should be 55100. So the number is 425-440-5100. Yeah. I hope it wasn't wrong in the email.
No, she's on. She's the SNL Underground, or she's in Idaho.
Okay, I'll look there. All right.
And then Shamima has a question she submitted. It's in the Q&A.
Oh, is it new? Because it wasn't there when I first looked. Let me go back and refresh it and see. Yeah, there was only one question there. Okay, Shamima just put a question in. Thanks for your clear and easy to understand explanations. You're welcome. I've been on a low-carb keto diet for a year. Then I need 3 meals of higher good-fat diet for energy, moderate protein, and soft-cooked vegetables and green blends. I'm trying to understand the difference between insulin resistance due to prolonged high sugar and high insulin diet, and physiologic insulin resistance due to prolonged low-carb diet. Are the symptoms different? I don't generally see that people become insulin resistant as a result of a prolonged low-carb diet. They produce less insulin, but I don't believe that they become resistant. In fact, my experience has been that when someone has been on a long-term low-carb diet, it actually calms and resets the insulin receptors. There may be a few exceptions to that, but in my opinion, in my experience, that's what there is there. Someone who's been on a long-term low-carb diet generally will have a lower hemoglobin A1C. They'll have lower fasting glucose levels. They're on a more of a ketogenic diet. Their fasting blood sugar may be very, very low, or their in-between meals may be very, very low. And they don't ever get very high. Generally, I don't see symptoms of somebody who's been on a low-carb diet for a long time, unless they're just not getting enough calories to maintain. Let's see. Does my higher-fat diet for energy cause the muscles to reject glucose in an attempt to spare glucose for the brain? That's not a mechanism I'm familiar with. I have not seen that documented. Maybe it is. It's maybe not, but it's not in the studies I've looked at, and I've looked at hundreds of studies. Yesterday, after a low-carb diet, my normal blood glucose from this meal is 106 to 112. I ate 150 grams of blueberries, and my blood sugar shot up to 130. Normally, I eat only 1 tablespoon of blueberries. This time, I lost my control. I'm totally dentally challenged and can eat only mashed and powdered food or soft foods. This limits my choices. Lack of the chewing affects my digestive abilities, and I take a digestive enzyme with every meal. I'm wondering what course of action should I take. Well, you know, here's the thing. If you eat blueberries and it causes your blood sugar to go up, I see that as a sign of that's a food that you want to stay away from. You want to experiment with it and have it with greens and experiment with the quantity, but there's certain foods that cause people's blood sugars to go up. So I would be looking at, is there another reason you might be in an insulin resistant state? How is your stress level? Are you doing stress management techniques throughout your day? Meditating, heart math, tapping. How's your sleep? Are you sleeping 7 to 8 hours, 7 to 9 hours? Some people actually need longer sleep. You might have some genetic predispositions to insulin resistance, in which case you have to be on a much stricter diet. So I would say that you need to be eating the foods that you can tolerate from a dental perspective, but also from a perspective of food. If you know that a tablespoon of blueberries does you well, then I'd stick there, right? You can continue to do your supplements. So I don't know what supplements you're taking. I don't know your history enough to really be able to comment further than that. Okay. Okay. And I will go to here. Okay. So I'm going to go through the cases. So since I don't see any hands up at this point, we're going to start with Margot. So I'm going to find Margot. Where did you say she was? Iowa? DePere. I don't see. I don't see anybody.
Idaho. Idaho.
Oh, Idaho. There you go. Oh, okay. Well, I wouldn't know that because there's no name on it. So, Bonner's Ferry.
I know.
Okay.
That's why I pointed it out to you.
Yeah. Okay. Let me open this. I'm trying to open her line in it. There we go. Hi there, Margot. You might have your line muted on your end. Can you unmute it? Try unmuting it. Hello? Margot?
She's saying she's in the chat box. But if you're on the phone, Margot, why can't you talk?
Yeah, it looks like
can
she's coming
me?
From the phone number. Now I can, yeah. Hi.
Oh. Hi.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here.
Well, first of all, when I read that you have 12 children, I just about fell on the floor. I'm the oldest of 9, and I know what a zoo that was and how challenging that was for my parents to raise us all. And 12 of them is a lot.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I give you a lot of credit for all you're doing and all the things you're doing with them and teaching the other kids. And, I mean, there's just a lot you're doing. So that's a lot. And even if – here's what I always tell people with a life like that. Even if you don't feel like you're a stressed out mama, you're like, blah, 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 you know, I'm stressed. There's a lot of physiologic stress that goes on with the caring and the birthing of 12 children. So you've done a lot and I really appreciate it. So what we're going to do is I'm going to share my screen. And in fact, I have already shared my screen. So if you're on the Zoom, you should see Margot's case up there. If you're not on Zoom, then you won't see it. So the way you get to Zoom is you go back to the email and you click the link that says, if we're going to have a screen share, click here. Looks like there's about 6 people on it. If you're just on the phone and can't see the computer, well, you're not going to see it. So just pay attention. It's always sometimes helpful to keep your attention focused. So Margot is 47 years old, and this case is on herself. She's married. She has 12 children and she's also a part-time bookkeeper. I don't know how you have time to do anything besides be a mom. It's pretty high intensity work, 5'1", 130 pounds. So a little above your ideal weight. How much would you like to be weighing, Margot?
I felt really good at around 115, 120.
Okay. Yeah. So you're about, you know, 10, 15 pounds less that you'd like to have on your body.
Yeah.
So no,
yeah.
You know, no obesity here or anything like that. The top 3 concerns are she had gestational diabetes that turned to diabetes after her 9th child. And even though she weighed about 100 pounds and gained up to 135, she still had diabetes. So gestational diabetes, meaning diabetes during pregnancy, but then it's usually transient and it goes away after the pregnancy, but this didn't. So what is your fasting glucose at this point? Because you said your A1C was only like 5.1 or 5.2, which is quite not diabetic.
Yeah, I'm not sure what, right now it's 5.3.
Okay.
When I was pregnant, I was like 5.0, 5.1. They had me take that glucose where you drink it. And they're the ones that said that I was diabetic, so I assumed I was diabetic because that's what they said.
Okay. So when they said you were diabetic, it's because you probably went up really high on that. And then after the pregnancy was over, what did they do to determine that you were still diabetic?
They had me take that juice again and said that I still went up over 200 with that.
Okay. So they put you on metformin and insulin at that point.
No. Only during pregnancy. I haven't been on insulin or anything since the babies. Nothing.
Okay. So great. So during the pregnancy, they put you on insulin and metformin. All three of those, or four of those? 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, four of those pregnancies.
Four of the pregnancies. Yes.
Okay. And then did they anticipate, hey, she's going to be diabetic during this pregnancy, so therefore, and then put you on that medication at the start, or did they wait and do a tolerance test to see?
I was doing my glucose readings after I found out that I had gestational diabetes, and so the next time, then I just started watching it at the very first and noticed that right when I got pregnant, my numbers just went way, way, way high. So I started noticing it, and so I addressed it to my doctor.
Yeah. Okay. And the first eight, nothing. Everything was fine the first eight pregnancies.
I was never ever tested clear until then. I'm short. I was skinny. I exercised. But now that I know what I know, I definitely was having gestational diabetes with my twins.
Okay. And what made you say that? It's the way you felt?
Knowing how I felt. Now I'm thinking, oh, that's what that feeling was.
Okay. Got it. So after the babies were born and the doctor said, hey, you're still diabetic, they wanted you to stay on medication, and you said no. Is that correct?
Yes, definitely not.
Great.
I didn't know what to
say. And have you been able to keep those numbers in a good range? Like you said, you're 5.3 right now, so it's a little higher than ideal, but certainly not even in the range where medicine would consider you insulin resistant.
Yeah, I've been there all along. I did get up to 5.6. I think that had a lot to do with stress, which I'm barely learning right now.
Yeah.
It's critical stress is, and I didn't realize, I mean, I just thought I was busy. I didn't even use the word stress in my vocabulary, just busy,
yeah.
Busy. Kind of thing, and I think that's where I started messing up, was not taking that into consideration.
Got it. And so when you started on this program, did you go through and do the timing of, because when they teach you to do it, they just tell you to do 2 hours, right, before meal and then 2 hours. Have you been doing the full curve of your glucose after meals?
It is crazy. I had no idea. I'm so glad I took this class. Thank you for that, because I'm actually – under 115 or so an hour. My peak has definitely been like in the 30-minute, 45-minute range, and I didn't even know to check then. I just thought, you know, you just check your blood at an hour after, not necessarily before. And I have definitely been going up into the 140s, and I didn't even know it. I didn't know that.
Okay, so you're going into the 140s about a half an hour or so after a meal, and then it comes back down so that it's reasonable at the 1 hour. Does it get back down to the fasting or the before meal level at the 2 hour point mark?
Yes.
It does. Okay. So you're one of those people who would just have fallen through the cracks, right?
I did, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably for a long time. Okay. And then I see that you're on like 30 different supplements or something. Have you been on these for a long time, or is this just over a shorter period?
When I started gaining weight, when I was about 44, 45, I started noticing I just started gaining weight. And so I started taking some chromium and stuff like that to try and help, because I noticed that I was starting to really, really crave sugar and like that. And has not been me all my life, but I was. And I realized I was starting to go under, and then I think I just got, you know, even more busy, and then I got the psoriasis. And since I got the psoriasis, I have way kicked it in gear trying to figure out what is going on with me, you know, because now I'm just feel like I'm out of whack.
Right. Right. Okay. And then let me ask you this. Did they test you for insulin, fasting insulin and or postprandial insulin?
Now, what was that?
Did they test your insulin during all this testing stuff? Did anybody ever test your insulin?
No, I got my A1C, but
not
that's
insulin.
All.
Yeah, I just want, no. I would want to make sure that you're not a latent autoimmune situation where you're just not producing enough insulin and it gets worse during pregnancy, which is very common, because especially uh-huh. autoimmunes always get worse during pregnancy. So that's the thing I would be wanting to look at, is to do minimally do insulin, like fasting insulin, and then probably around the half hour, 40-minute mark, because that's when you seem to peak, and see what it is. So and if you're going up reasonably, then that's fine. But if, you know, at half an hour after you eat, when your glucose is up at a 140, is it because your insulin levels are too low or too high? And that'll help us to see whether it's insulin resistance or an adult onset autoimmune diabetes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
See what I mean? So that's something, if you can't get your doctor to do it, go to ZRT Labs. They have a home blood spot kit where you can order the kit. You take the readings and then you send in the kits back to them and they'll send you your readings.
Okay.
Because that to me is a real important thing. Yeah. Especially, you know, given it gets worse during pregnancy like this and then it lingers, I don't know why I have this feeling about it, but I just want to make sure that that's not it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So I would check that out. And if that shows up, fine. Like, so you want to look at fasting being, I like to see 3-5 at the most, so 3-5. If fasting's above 5, you don't even have to do the other one because it's going to go up because you're already producing enough insulin. But if the fasting is 3 or less, then that could be perfectly fine. Then we want to see what it is after a meal.
Okay.
And if it's not going up, you know, if it goes up like 30, 40, 50, then it's clear insulin resistance. You're producing too much insulin. But if it goes only to maybe 3, I've had people go from, you know, 1 to 2, or have it be 3 fasting, but then 3 after they've eaten a meal, you know, and you want to make sure it's the highest carb meal that you usually would eat.
Okay.
Probably, given that you do dairy, which I highly recommend you get off of, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Because dairy doesn't tend to raise glucose, but it raises insulin.
Yeah, I was reading that in your stuff. I had never heard that before because I was definitely going by the glucose testings, and I don't go high on dairy.
Yeah, and I know it's fresh, and you grow your own basically, so it's the best you could do. But the whey in the dairy is definitely a stimulator of insulin, which is good if you. I mean, actually, might be good if it turns out that you do have an autoimmune thing going on, or a pancreatic failure where you're not. I'm a little concerned about dairy with autoimmune just because of the inflammatory response. But it's certainly something that, you know, and it cross-reacts with gluten. Because I know you said you recently got off gluten. How recently did you get off gluten? Was that just over the last couple of months?
It's been a year since I've been off. When I got the psoriasis, I had heard that that it's wheat that causes psoriasis, so I cut that out because I had no idea about the psoriasis. Yeah. I mean, 3 different doctors told me that they thought it was ringworm all over my body.
Oh,
and I was just about ready to panic because I hadn't even really heard the word psoriasis, really, you know.
Mm. Okay. And has the psoriasis improved since you got the?
It's definitely improved, but stressful situations, I can break out all over my back. It's just like within 5 minutes, I can feel them building.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Okay. So I would recommend an autoimmune kind of a diet, which is an anti-inflammatory diet, which would be, you know, getting off of, I would get off dairy, eggs. I wouldn't eat any meat except for meat that's homegrown, like the venison you mentioned. You get your own deer, but I would never buy store-bought meat. because it's going to be more inflammatory. And I'd go moderate with it because of the omega-6s that can create inflammation. But I'd certainly get off of, I'd get off of dairy, eggs, the top six allergens minimally for 3 months, just to see if things calm down, and then you can do a reintroduction.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so that's it on that. So what's your typical, like, what's your typical day? What's your typical morning, noon, and evening meal?
My meals, mostly I do a lot of eggs, salsa. With my eggs, I weigh lots of eggs just because they always work, and my blood testings are always low. I felt good with them when I've been pregnant. You know, they didn't affect me. They made me feel like I could, you know, carry on my day. So I've done eggs, lots of cottage cheese, lots of yogurt, a homemade yogurt, you know, so it doesn't have sweetener or anything in it. But, yeah, probably the wrong thing. If I'm doing
probably the wrong things, it could very well be. I mean, those things might work for you, but not a lot of either of them. So if you have a predominantly vegetable-based diet, you have an egg here or there, you have some, you know, and all this is organic and you know, fresh done, then it may not be a problem. I would certainly try an elimination diet because that's something you haven't done. And try the elimination diet with the idea that you're going to go back and test it later, but you're going to give your body a break. Are there any other foods that you've had in the past where you've said, oh, I suspect there might be an issue here. I get a little itchy after it. I get sniffly.
I definitely, once I started realizing I needed to watch for that, wheat definitely did. Any sugary things definitely did. And I was trying to get past that addiction that I was going through, you know, about a year ago where I just felt like I was craving sugar really, really, really bad.
Yep.
You know, and I could tell that it was hurting me, but it was really kind of hard to, you know, say stop.
Yep. Okay, and that's the sign when, you know, you feel like something's hurting you, but it's almost like an addictive thing. Like,
yeah.
We'll just have one more and I'll stop tomorrow, right?
Exactly.
That whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's a clear sign of it. So great you got that out, but I would get away from anything that cross-reacts with the wheat. And
okay.
Dairy eggs do. Some other grains might, but those do very, very commonly.
Okay.
And they are inflammatory. They're higher in the omega-6 fats that can cause inflammation. Not necessarily for everybody, but it's certainly, given all the challenges you've had, I'd check that out. I would do an elimination diet. Do it. You can always add things back and try later.
Okay.
So you don't do soy.
No.
So you don't do, you said not much snack anymore or do 5 small meals. So you're doing 3 meals?
3. Just since I've started this, I hadn't really heard of that. I'm definitely from the 90s where where you had your
five small meals.
Yeah. I'm definitely from that era. So I'm trying to get my brain wrapped around, you know, trying to add fat in there and like that.
Yeah, I hear you. I would, I would just give it a try. Do the metabolic reset the way we laid it out for 30 days.
Okay.
And see how it goes. What are you feeling? I mean, other than the psoriasis, what are some of the symptoms that you're feeling? Do you have low energy? It sounds like you're sleeping well.
No, I don't sleep well at all. I definitely take melatonin. I'm so glad that I discovered melatonin. My sleep got messed up with really, really, really bad when I got the psoriasis.
Okay.
Really, I'm like, fall asleep just right off the bat, but wake up at 2 or 3 and cannot get back to sleep till like 5 or 6.
Okay.
You know, so it's.
How old are your how old's your youngest?
My youngest is 3 now.
Okay. So here's the thing with having had so many babies, and what was the time, what's the age of the oldest?
She's 25.
3 to 25. So 22 years you had 12 babies. So you pretty much always had an infant or a toddler around.
Yes, including my twins, but yes, pretty much, definitely.
Pretty much. Okay. So here's the thing, and I even found this with just having 2 children 4 years apart, that just when the firstborn was starting to sleep through the night and not wake me up, the second one was born. And yeah. I was in that mode of being up and woken up for 3 years. And then it took me a couple of years after that, after he was three. So he's probably 5 or 6 by the time I could actually sleep through the night without waking up at the typical times that he would wake me up. So it's very common that your body gets in that mode and your cortisol rhythm adapts to it for survival purposes, right?
Uh-huh.
So there could be that rhythm. The melatonin can be certainly a good thing to be doing at this point. Are you nursing the three-year-old?
No, I just nursed him for about 13 months.
Okay. So then it's easier in terms of what supplements you can take, obviously, because you don't have to worry about it passing into breast milk. So I'd be looking at your adrenals, just because it's, you know, having had 12 children and all that time, plus all the gestational diabetes and then not sleeping or not being able to stay asleep. That's a sign of adrenal imbalance. So I would be looking at adrenal dysfunction. I'm looking at some of your habits. You have good habits of no caffeine and no soft drinks and no sugar. You eat out once a week. But what I see is, and you meditate? That's really cool that you actually meditate. How do you find time?
I do it early in the morning before any of the kids wake up.
That's awesome. Congratulations on that. It does say, though, that you drink tap water 5 or more times a week, but you also drink purified water 5 or more times a week. What's that about?
Well, when I go to work, I have the purified water, but at home we have our own well, and it doesn't have anything in it.
Okay. It's have you tested it to make sure that it doesn't have
any
metals or anything? Okay, good. Okay, so it's not purified water, but it's not really tap water. It's well water. We don't have that on there. We should have a well water question. But that's what confused me because you said sleeping 8 or more hours, 5 times or more a week.
I do, but I just, well, I since I take that, if I don't take the melatonin, it's way less and I have a really, really bad day the next day for sure. But I don't dare not take the melatonin.
So you take the melatonin and then you do sleep.
Uh-huh.
And if you wake up, it's just a quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if I
got
wake
it.
Up in the middle of the night, I take some more melatonin.
I'm glad you found something that works because that's super important. Okay. So, you know, when we're going through a case, we want to go through and look at the five main areas that can affect blood sugar balance. So we mentioned stress. Mentioned the adrenals might be involved given 12 kids in 25 years or 22 years. That's a lot of kids and that's a lot of stress on the body physiologically, even if, you know, you had a full-time live-in person taking care of the kids and you didn't have to do anything but sit around and do nothing. It's still stressful on your body. And I know that's not the case here. And plus you work part-time, plus you volunteer and take care of kids. So a lot of stuff there. So we look at that. We look at movement. Do you get exercise, movement, do you get time for that? Do you do that first thing in the morning?
I do that first thing in the morning. When I got the psoriasis, it almost got to the point, and I keep referring to the psoriasis because that's when it felt like my life went kapook.
Mm-hmm.
When I exercised, it would totally wipe me clear out, and I love to exercise, you know, before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, this is not how you're supposed to feel after you exercise where you just almost feel like you want to collapse, you know, kind of thing. So I'm way, way, way careful how I exercise, but I still love walking.
Yep. Okay, stick with that. But that's another sign of adrenal fatigue too, by the way.
Oh.
That when you exercise beyond just a light exercise, you feel exhausted for days.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And
so
I
look at that.
I did notice after I exercised, my blood has gone up from what I was before I exercised.
Yep, which means that you're over-exercising for where you're at this point. You're triggering a cortisol response. That's usually what happens.
Okay.
And then it's going and breaking down your muscle to create sugar to help fuel for the exercise.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's looking like there's some definitely adrenals is a place to be looking here. Again, looking at your insulin levels, like I said earlier. So that's that. We talked. Let's look at the other two. The sleep is an issue, but you kind of got that under control. So I'm not sure that that's actually contributing to the insulin problem because with the melatonin, you are getting your sleep. So that's a good thing. Timing, you talked about going from the 5 meals to 3 meals a day. Are you staying away from food 3 hours before bed? Are you getting some protein and low carb in the morning? Sounds like you are.
Yeah.
That you do an egg and, yeah. All right. So, you know, diet-wise, I think the biggest ones I see so far is potential of omega-3-6 imbalance. So I would be looking at the omega-3-6 charts and just like kind of mapping out your food and making sure that you're getting enough omega-3. I haven't looked yet carefully. I glanced at your chart, but it's so many supplements it kind of made my eyes boggle. But
it is crazy.
Like, whoa. How long does it take to do that? Yeah, so the omega-3-6 balance, I'd look for that from food. And from the sounds of it, with the fact that you're eating a lot of dairy and a lot of eggs, you probably have a predominance of omega-6, which is going to put you more into an inflammatory state, which can affect insulin receptors, but also the skin, psoriasis, autoimmune. Okay?
Okay.
So I'd be looking at that, making sure you're on a I didn't see, but I, like I said, I didn't look as carefully as I could have. Are you on like an EPA, DHEA, a DHA,
yes.
sorry, not DHA, EPA, DHA supplement?
Yes, I am. I take three of those capsules, or three, whatever they're called, the soft
gel. Okay. All right. Yeah. So I'd be looking at balancing dietary things there and really going towards anti-inflammatory. And we have an alkaline acid food chart, and we have the anti-inflammatory food charts in the nutrition segment. So I'd look at those things from the food perspective. But I think the stress is probably a big one, even though you sound calm and mellow, but there's a lot of life stress there, and it could be affecting you, especially given what you told me about the exercise and the sleep. You did give me some blood work, and Lynn put it into a... Okay, so before we look at that, I don't know if you guys can see this. Let me see if I can get this out of the way. These are the supplements she's taken. Holy cow, that's a lot of supplements.
It feels like too much, but I don't know where to stop, or I don't know what to stop doing because they all feel like they are working or helping.
Okay,
something.
So that's the first step is, right, if you actually notice a difference with them, you feel that they're helping, then it's hard to get rid of. You can look for redundancies and combine things because some of these things look similar, like glucose gold and the belly trim XP. I'm not sure exactly what's in there. Oh, that's CLA. Oh, you got the krill oil, ageless body, biotrust, vitamin C. Yeah, you know what would be really cool if you had time to do this would be put these supplements in a spreadsheet where you've got the nutrients across one axis and the supplements across another, and put the amounts that you're getting in each and then be able to add it up and see is there a lot of duplication between them? So there might be a way to combine some of this. There's no way we have time on a call like this to really help you do that for sure. We do that with our clients in our high-end client programs where we take them in for a year and go through all the labs, but and the supplements. But here's what I'm going to do. That's what I would be looking at. So the ones I want to make sure, you said you're already taking chromium. You said you're taking, I don't know if I see I see magnesium. I see the vitamin D. I'm going to look at your labs in a minute and see where your D is and see if you're taking enough because that looks like, where'd it go? I just lost the vitamin D3. How much do you take? How much is in that?
It's about 5,000, and I tried 1,000, and I tried 2, and I tried 3, and 5 was what it felt like it was doing something, so I kept it at 5.
Yep. I oftentimes get people on more than that, so no need to apologize for being on 5. Let me just tell you. Let me see. I'm going to switch. I'm going to open up I have a spreadsheet. Lynn actually put your numbers in a spreadsheet. Here you are. And I'm going to just switch my share. I'm going to... pause share, new share. There we go. And I'm going to go to the Excel sheet, and I'll take a look at what you've got. Margo, here we go. Share screen. Okay, so you should see the screen share switch. And this is a sheet that we use in our NEPT program for keeping track of clients' data, and it's something that I created so that we can – just see everything all in one sheet. It's much easier to read something like this than it is to read those labs that they give you, especially if you've got multiple dates. We only have one date here, but this is the kind of thing where you can keep track of it over time and keep track of it for your clients over time. But it looks like you didn't have the glucose number. Let me look back there a minute. Yeah, we don't have glucose numbers. in there, do we? I mean, maybe I'm not far enough. Yeah, 103. So that's fasting. So your fasting glucose is still high, you know, so it's in that range of insulin resistance. Your blood urea nitrogen is 24 and the creatinine. So there might be some kidney stress going on there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's some adrenal stress. When the sodium potassium ratios are off, there's definitely an adrenal stress. So I would look into that. I can't say definitely is, but there's a suggestion of, yeah, all of these. Acid alkaline, the carbon dioxide being low, your alkalinity. And I can't go into the full descriptions of all this because, you know, we have a 20 hour module of this in an EPT. On how to read these and understand them. Your alkaline phosphatase is low. Zinc is an important nutrient, and this is a zinc-dependent enzyme. Oftentimes in medicine, they just look and see if alkaline phosphatase is high, which could indicate a bone or a liver problem. But yours is low, and that oftentimes indicates that there's a problem with zinc. It's just a suggestion of a functional thing. Are you taking zinc at this point?
You know what? I don't think I have any zinc in any of that stuff that I'm taking. Everything, I don't think I have zinc in there.
Great. Well, zinc is super important for not just blood sugar balance, but for skin health, immune health, digestive enzymes, HCL production, sex hormones, everything. You probably don't have any problems with your sex hormones, but given 12 children. But the issue is zinc. So I would be looking at getting you into a liquid zinc. A Good State is a brand that's really easy to find on Amazon, and it's pretty inexpensive, and take, you know, 20, 30 milligrams a day of it.
Okay.
Let's see what else we have here. So you don't have your lipid numbers. I don't see thyroid numbers, but your immune system, red blood cells are a little high. It could be dehydration. Yeah, there's some anemia going on here. See how your hemoglobin is really low? It's 1 point, and that could be resulting in tiredness. Your hematocrit is low. Your MCV is low. So it's most likely an iron deficiency anemia. I don't have any iron numbers or ferritin numbers, but this MCV, it means that your red cells are very small, and that's usually a lack of iron. If they're too big, like say that number was 97, it would suggest more of a folate or a B12 deficiency. So I'd be looking at that. Might be another test that you want to follow up with is iron and ferritin. And I would do both, not just iron and not just ferritin. Some doctors just do iron, some just do ferritin. We are functional practitioners. We want to know what's going on in the function of the body, not absolute amounts. And if one is high and one is low, that's an abnormality of the biochemistry, and we want to understand that. So I would get iron and ferritin, but I would definitely look at iron as being an issue. You know, maybe not enough of it. I mean, God, you gave birth to 12 children. You probably really drained your iron stores, every single one of them, you know, one after another. So looking at that, if you don't like to take even more supplements, you could try a food form, like getting an herb called yellow dock, very good source of it. Upping things like sea vegetables, green leafy vegetables, nettles, things like that, that are good sources of it, and just incorporating them into greens and smoothies and all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
You probably don't eat enough greens based on what you told me. I don't know how much you do eat of vegetables and green leafies, but I would say you should be getting somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 to 2 a day of green leafy vegetables and cruciferous vegetables and things like that to try to move this along.
I do. For sure, a salad a day kind of thing. But, yeah, I'm sure I could do more.
Probably could you do more, maybe some drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hang 1 second.
Everything okay? What's that? Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Sorry, my son. Yeah, and, you know, overall, your white blood cells look fine. Your immune system numbers all look fine, so which is unusual given that, you know, you've got some autoimmune activity. So I think that it's not like this really deep thing that I think you can probably get it under control, and maybe it's just related to food allergies. Yes. You just haven't identified all of them. Hemoglobin A1C here was 5.6, so that's, you know, average is probably 119.
Yeah, and I'm down to 5.3 now.
Oh, good. So you had that. When did you have it redone? Oh, this is 2016. Oh, this is old.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, I just noticed. I was thinking it was a month and a half ago. Okay, yeah, this is old. ANA, normal. Okay. Yeah, have they done more than that in terms of an autoimmune panel?
No. Yeah, that's why I was surprised that they didn't catch that I had psoriasis, because it was all over my body at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Until I went to a specialist, and he said, yeah, you got all five of the types of psoriasis. And I'm like, oh, sweet.
And when he said all five of the types, did he do antibodies?
No, he described the different kinds, like you got
of the lesions. He described
that.
So he was a specialist, so he knew what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Big thing with psoriasis for everybody is certainly the gluten, but gut health. Leaky gut's a biggie. Getting your gut health in order, getting your microbiome. I didn't look to see if you have any probiotics in there, but making sure that you're eating regularly probiotic foods, looking at your digestion. Are you having any digestive upsets or digestive issues? And healing a leaky gut is huge when it comes to skin things like psoriasis.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Was this helpful?
I feel like maybe I might come launch. You know, yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, you're so very welcome. Keep us posted.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So let me switch back to the new share over back to that other one where I had here in the PDFs, right? Okay. And then we're going to move to Janine. I'm going to look to see if there are any questions that have been typed in or comments that anybody has about any of this. Lynn, actually, if you can look, because my screen is like, whoa, see if there's any questions or comments that need to address at this point before I move on. All right. Good. Thank you. All right. So can you open up Janine's line? Are you on there? Can you see it? So you opened up Janine's line?
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can. Hi, Janine.
Hi, Dr. Rita Mary.
Hey. All right. So this is Janine, and it looks like everybody that submitted cases today gave cases their own case, which is fine. I'm totally fine with that. I know there's other people who do programs, practitioner programs, and they say, no, you can't. You have to submit patient-client cases, but a lot of people are at the beginning stages and don't really have. And I think you do learn a lot from doing your own case. And also other people, I think you learn a lot in listening to me inquire, because I can get the answers rather than saying, okay, go back to your client and ask these 20 questions. I can just ask them and get the answers, and you can follow my line of thinking and the way I would go through it. I mean, this isn't exactly how I would go through it with a new client, because we're doing it in a shorter period of time. I'm not doing the whole established rapport and, you know, all that sort of stuff, although I figure we can get some good rapport going here. But I want to give you an idea of the kinds of things that get triggered in my mind when I'm reading certain things in a case. Does that make sense? And you can answer for everybody, Janine.
I'm sorry, I kind of have an echo, but I missed the first few words. But first of all, I spent like 2 hours doing detail on my first, you know, logging in my case upload, and I hit previous and it deleted everything.
Oh, no.
So I took a break and came back, and then I kind of just went really fast. So I apologize if it's not.
So you can give me some background. So you're 5'2", you're 142, so you're a little higher weight than you probably want to be. What would you like to be in terms of weight?
I'm not sure. I have a fear of losing weight from my past history, but I think I've lost another 4 pounds. I did a cleanse this week, and I haven't weighed myself, and I weighed yesterday with like 138, so I've dropped, you know, a little bit more weight, but I'm not exactly sure where I'm comfortable at. And my stomach is pretty much flat.
You're good.
Yeah, just kind of the arms and stuff. But
excellent. Okay. and you're 52. You have three children. Are they all grown or are some of them still living with you?
They're all grown. I do have a 21-year-old in the house.
Okay, cool. And your top three concerns, 15 years of metabolic syndrome, that wasn't addressed by doctors. So when you say it wasn't addressed by doctors, did you know that that was what was going on, or did you just recently figure it out and look back?
Well, the term was always just thrown out there. In 2014, a doctor told me, you know, my blood sugars, because they discovered I had some fatty liver, and he told me to cut back on the sweets and all that. So I did that. And really started, you know, tuning up my diet. And they gave me some pills. I forgot the name of it. And it was dropping my blood sugar down to 50. So he took me off of it, and that was it. And then a year ago, I started with this PA. And she threw out the word metabolic syndrome. And I had met you. And so, of course, hearing metabolic syndrome and how dangerous it is, all the light bulbs went on, and here I am. As you know, I'm a very complicated case, so.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention on here your liver. So you've not mentioned your top three concerns, and you didn't even put your liver.
No, because I've dealt with liver for 16 years, and I think a lot of insulin resistance, gut problems, will keep the liver in check because I am compensated. My liver panels have always been pretty good. I did remove the fatty liver by changing my diet.
Great.
You know, so, and I've been.
I've heard you mention a couple of times that you have cirrhosis or that you had cirrhosis.
I have cirrhosis, and it's compensated. I put it somewhere.
Okay, but when you say you have it, is do you, you said your liver enzymes look good? So, what is it that indicates that the there's still cirrhosis going on?
CAT scans. I have portal hypertension.
Okay.
I've had a GI doctor off and on a couple of years, a new one recently, and they all say, you're doing good. Keep doing what you're doing. But, no, there's more to it. Metabolic syndrome. Come on. You know?
Yeah. So I'm just curious, and this is just me throwing it out there. Mm-hmm. What if... If you feel like the cirrhosis is under control, right, and you're taking care of it with diet, what if you no longer said, I have cirrhosis, or thought I have cirrhosis?
You know what? I really don't think about it. Like you said, my top three health concerns,
yeah.
I didn't even mention it.
I know. But I've heard you mention it a number of times, and that's why I'm thinking, like, what if, you know, what if you left it out? Yay. Let's leave it out. Let's just not even think I have cirrhosis or I did have, you know, maybe I did have cirrhosis or I'm healing my liver versus, and it's just, it's just semantics, Janine.
Yeah.
But I think that we say things and it perpetuates a belief system about it, which can perpetuate the subconscious maintaining an identity.
Yeah.
So, and I'm just throwing this out there because this is some of the stuff you're going to be dealing with, you know, everybody's going to be dealing with clients. They'll talk about my Hashimoto's. Oh, I can't do that because of my Hashimoto's. Wow, you own that Hashimoto's. What if I tried to take it away from you? Would you be pissed at me? You know what I'm saying? It's like we identify with it. And I haven't heard you say my cirrhosis, but I have heard you say I have cirrhosis.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just, you know, if it doesn't land well, it doesn't land well. But I'm just inviting you to consider not bringing it up to your conscious brain, not even allowing it to be. It's like, yeah, that was something. But Dr. Sill already told me I'm doing well now.
Yeah, it's been that way for a while now.
So yeah.
Doing this training is like owning my cyber fog. It's not mine anymore.
It's not mine anymore. Bye. See ya.
I don't need it anymore.
I'm going to just let go of it. You don't even have to give it away. You can just drop it.
And then I think along with metabolic syndrome is the PTSD. So that's been maybe that should have been top because that's a major stressor for insulin resistance. And I recently was labeled with PTSD. So I took on that label for a few days and kind of detox myself from that, I want to say.
Yeah.
But the stress and dealing with a lot of things has been difficult the last 6 months, trying to start CMBS and higher SPT. So why I'm here today, because a little background, I'm working kind of both programs, and I couldn't even think anymore just due to stress. So I set myself back out of my classes. I do it here and there, but I thought now I'm dealing with mental to work on stress.
And that, you know, is the key to all of it, right? If you can work on diet all you want, you can take all kinds of supplements and herbs, but if the underlying root cause is stress that keeps playing in your body, your number one job is to manage that stress.
Yes.
Right? And so, so it's like, let's just, you know, call it what it is, but I wouldn't take on a label because, again, you know, PTSD, what is that? Post-traumatic stress syndrome, right? It's giving a name, a diagnosis to a condition that so many of us have. Like, who doesn't have a really traumatic, stressful event in their past? Very few. Yeah, there are a few that don't, but very few. Right?
Yeah, just like the ACEs.
Exactly, right? Those ACEs, I mean, that's like 75% of people when they ask people, for those of you who don't know what that is, that's the adverse childhood events. Mm-hmm. And they're finding that, you know, based on a number of questions, like 5 simple or 10 simple questions you ask somebody about things that happened in their childhood, it just perpetuates and comes into adulthood. Does that mean that you have to identify with it? Does that mean that you have to take it on? And I guess I'm just anti-diagnosis, right? I've been trained in it. I know how to do it. I'm licensed to diagnose. But I don't like it because, to me, it puts somebody in a box. It goes, oh, let's put you in the box with all the other people with this label. And that means that there's this limited number of strategies that we can use to help you with that condition. But when in reality, there's as many different strategies, combinations of strategies, as there are people, right? And so there's a wide variety of things we can help to bring your nervous system into balance, right? And that's going to affect your gut. It's going to affect your liver. It's going to affect your blood sugar management, right?
Definitely.
So all of that, and it's going to be the kind of stuff that for you, it may be these three are pivotal steps. For somebody else who has the same label as you, it's going to be something else. So I this is just one of my pet peeves, so just forgive me as I rant about this. I just think that when we diagnose somebody, we're just saying, oh, here you are. You're not unique. You're not Janine anymore. You're a PTSD patient, and we're going to put you in the box over here with the PTSD patients. Oh, and you're cirrhosis. You're over here with these guys. And then you're this. And it just like labels you and puts you in a box. And so what we want to do is look, and what our goal is when we're working with our clients, is to really treat them as an individual and see what are the imbalances and what are the cornerstone things that may have caused it. Like, what was happening right before you started having certain symptoms? And when it's an adverse childhood event or this traumatic thing, it's usually pretty clear to go, okay, ever since then, things have been going downhill. Okay, then we go, okay, how do we take this out of your nervous system now? We're not going to erase it, right? It'll always be there. You're unlikely to forget it unless you get bonked in the head and have amnesia. But it's taking away the charge. And I think that's what the goal with working with somebody with a post-traumatic stress response. I don't even like calling it a disorder or a syndrome, because it may not actually be a disorder, right? It just may be your survival mechanism at work. And when we can get you to the point where you feel safe, like, oh, that was then, this is now. That was then, this is now, right? Look around your situation. Am I safe? Is there anything in this environment right here that makes me not safe? And that's a stress response. It's a very good response to feeling that stress come on, like, okay, all of a sudden you're feeling this way, and that trigger was long gone. You can stop yourself. You can look around the room. You can get yourself present and grounded. Breathe. Say, okay, am I safe? Am I safe? Is there anything in this environment right here that's not safe for me? I don't see any tigers here, right? There's no lions. There's no tigers. There's no big man with, you know, with a bad attitude is going to hurt me. Whatever that past thing might have been, it's bringing yourself into the present. And it takes over and over and over again to remind your nervous system that you're okay, that you're safe. And the safe chemistry is way different than stress chemistry. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. What does your body feel like when you're safe?
I'm relaxed.
Yeah. And what else?
I can breathe.
Breathe, right? Effect on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does that affect your blood sugar when you feel relaxed compared to when you feel stressed?
Well, I haven't been able to check it, but I know that it's much lower. I was checking it today, and I just got a new tester. So, I've been implementing heart math really a
beautiful.
Lot. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Just like, okay, what can I do? I go out in the sun, stretch, take some deep breaths through, you know, just the 3 breaths, put my place on the beach, and, you know, that's the simplest and most blessed thing you could do is that heart math.
Yeah, and what if all the symptoms that you're experiencing right now have some root in you not feeling safe?
I'm sorry?
I said, what if it turns out that all of the symptoms, whether it be liver symptoms, gut dysbiosis, immune system, endometriosis, metabolic syndrome, what if we were like digging down and we were going to the root and what we did was, oh my God, all four of these trees are coming from the same root.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't mean that there aren't imbalances in each of those areas that we then could address. But if you go, whoa, these are all coming from the same root.
Yeah, that's my conclusion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've kind of realized that there's a lot of summits. And doing a lot of researching. So definitely, that's why I decided, you know what, these programs are here. I need to take care of my mental health. And I started a new program. I think I put it on, it's called NARP. Actually, there's another practitioner in the INE who led me to. And
what is the name of the program again?
It's NARP, N-A-R-P.
N-A-R-P, okay. I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's narcissistic. Yeah. And I'm telling you, energy blocks. I had a Morton's neuroma in my left foot is almost gone within like a week of doing this.
Yeah.
The skin, the muscles are softening. So I'm really, trying to take the time to do it.
Absolutely.
Because you're right. All the nutrition, all these pills, all the greens I drink, everything I'm doing is not going to help until you have mental stability.
Exactly. And it's not that they're not important. You still need to do those.
Exactly.
You have to really balance it, right? Some people will say just work on the stress and everything else will go away. Well, if you work on the stress but you're still eating Cheetos and M&M's, it's hard to get balanced, right?
But to get results.
To get results, you've got to address all of the roots.
Yeah.
You can't just get rid of one root. What happens if you go out to the garden and you pull up the roots of one weed that you don't want, but not the others, but you cut the others at the soil level, the others are going to grow back, right? So we need to get at the root, whatever that joint root is. You've had a lot of stress on your system. I mean, I'm looking at the physiologic stress, between tonsils and ectopic pregnancies and miscarriages, thyroid nodules, gallbladder. I mean, your list of surgeries, I thought I had a long list of surgeries. Your list of surgeries and diagnoses is huge, right?
Yeah.
And going back, I mean, started at age 5. I don't know how far back your post-traumatic stress incidences have started, but a lot of times that's, those early wounds.
My psychiatrist says from childhood. So
yeah.
I thought it was just from 10 years of domestic violence.
Yeah.
it goes back to childhood.
It goes back to childhood, right?
Yeah, so I'm doing the inner child work is what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you most like to get out of this case today? What are your biggest top questions? Because, well, you know, we can talk for hours on this, and I know you're getting a lot of support.
I went to my doctor with your sheet, her test to be done. So I went to the lab, and to get the, I wanted to make sure about the pancreas, having no antibodies there. I got the fasting insulin.
Okay, so I've got those. I'm gonna put them up. How's that? Can I put them up on the screen?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Let me put them up on the screen. Where did it go? I had it open earlier. Well, that's Margo's. Let me go back to this other screen and I'll get it open. And okay, so that's and RSVT, Janine. Here we go. So Lynn actually took your numbers and put it in one of these trackers just to make it easier for me to read it. It may not be all of them in there, and we can go back and look at those separately. Give me a second. I'm hearing myself echo. So Lynn, could you just check to make sure nobody else is open, line open? Sometimes that means that somebody else's line is open. There it goes.
That might have been me. The bird came all the way into the office. I had to go drop her off, so I unplugged myself. So.
Oh, that might have been. Okay, good. All right, so here's Janine's. So we're going to open up your tracker, and we're going to look at your vitamin D numbers. They're still a bit on the low side.
Yeah, actually.
Oh, and by the way, I wanted to say to Margo, I don't know what your vitamin Ds are because I didn't see a vitamin D in your thing. I might have missed it, but if your vitamin D is still low in spite of taking 5,000, feel free to raise it. Okay, so. Your fasting glucose has gotten better. It's 98 most recently, so it's on the mend. Are you following the sweet spot type diet, the insulin resistance diet, the metabolic reset? Have you done the reset?
I haven't done the reset. I started it, but to be honest with you, like I said, my home environment has been very chaotic and stressful. So, and I lost my meter, and I just got one today. So, I'm going to get the program out. And to be honest with you, I've been like a roller coaster the last 3-4 months. And then especially the last month or so, getting anxious to get these labs done because all of a sudden I started having like hot flashes, like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm getting hot again and all this I've normalized. So that's why I wanted to get the thyroid done, the insulin. You know, the fasting insulin, all these done to see what chemically was going on with me, and then also work on, you know, the mental. I do the chia porridge, the green drink, the green waters, really adhering to it, you know, and I'm getting more energy day by day, but these hot things going on, I'm like, what? Why?
What's going on here? Yeah, your alkaline phosphatase, like Margo's, is on the low side. It's getting better. Well, you know, 60, 63, but zinc would be a helpful addition for you.
Yeah, I'm taking 50 milligrams a day.
50? How long have you been doing that for?
I want to say at least 3 months, if not longer. I went through one bottle already, and I'm starting on my second one.
What format? Is it the Good State or the Premier?
You know, it's through Pure Formulas. It's a chili. Should I get the other one?
I'd switch. You know, if you're taking that much, 50 is quite a lot. If you're taking that much and it's not really changing your numbers, I'd bump it up or I'd change form rather than bumping it up. I mean, some people take as much as 90 without seeing some other numbers. I wouldn't necessarily recommend you go that high. You could go to 60 maybe. But especially in cases where there's been a lot of stress and anxiety, you could go higher. But you might want to switch, or what I would do if you still have some of that formula, I would up it and go to 60 or 70 for a little bit.
I'll
and then once you're ready to finish it, switch it. Is it, it's a liquid?
No. These are
get a liquid. Get a liquid. Okay, because liquid's going to be absorbed much better.
Yeah. My problem here also, a lot of this stuff between CMBS and art, you know, to get all these supplements and also food, you know, I'm on a very limited budget.
Yep.
So I figure if I can fix myself, I can fix anyone.
Well,
we're on a budget, you know?
and work on a budget. But you know what? The thing is, if the liquids are going to be cheaper, if you get like Good State brand, Good State brand is very inexpensive for what you get. You could probably buy a bottle of it for $15.
Okay,
and then
on our list, the name
just go to Amazon and look for Good State.
Okay,
it might be on our list because I list all the ones I use.
Okay.
Yeah, but Good State, and I would up that because that's going to be pivotal in everything. That's
okay,
recent.
Yeah.
Okay, it's one thing to look at lists of supplements that are part of a program and want to get them, but it's another thing to look at your own labs and say, whoops, I actually need that.
Yeah, because I think I started that right after, well, I've been with you over a year, but starting the program, I think I started it. So 6 months, yeah, at least, so when it's not up.
Yeah, it's not
okay.
up. Yeah, it's not up. So we have your thyroid, your TSH. Actually, I need to update my ranges. 1.01 is fine. 8 is good. I never look at T3 uptake. I don't think it's accurate. It's just a calculated number. Total T3 is good. Free T4 is good. The one number you're missing is free T3. But overall, given that your total T3 is pretty good, you probably, I'm not thinking you have a thyroid issue at all.
Okay.
You do have a little bit of antibody activity. No, wait, that's reverse. Never mind. I was looking down. That's reverse T3. The way you, that number's not out of range. Lynn, let's just talk about these. For everybody, when you use my sheet, the range is 90 to 350. If hers is 18, it really means that it's on a, you have to look at nanograms. Hers is probably measured on picograms per, so if I change this, if I say enable editing, that really is a 181 on this range, which is not out of balance at all. You have to always look when you're putting them in our spreadsheet. For those of you who have access to our spreadsheet. Okay, how am I going to do this? Whoops, it stopped. What? It just crashed. There we go. All right, let's look. Okay. I don't know what just happened. I don't know what just happened. It just went blank when I tried to. You see, like it's a blank screen? I'm going to open it up again. All I did was try to enable editing and it just went kapowie on me. Let me open it up again. Yeah, so just for those of you who are in NEPT who have access to that, when you see numbers that are off by a major scale like that when you're putting it in, what's happening here? Then you have to multiply it by 100. Uh-oh. It's not opening. I lost it completely. There's Margo's. I'm going to close Margo's. And I'm going to open Janine's. That's really weird. Let me see. The tabs are missing from across the bottom. This is the first page of this. Lynn, would you upload it? You just send it to me by Skype again. I don't know if my file got corrupted. When I tried to edit it, it got corrupted, but it's just showing the first page. It's not showing the rest of it unless I'm looking at it. Well, maybe I'm looking at a different view. No, that's weird. All right, Lynn, will you resend it to me? Just send it to me as a Skype. It's weird. All right, let me switch to Lynn. Okay, I'm not seeing Lynn. Lynn, are you still there? All right. Give me a second. I'm going to go into. Okay. I'm looking for. I'll look to see if it's still where I had it before. There's Margo's. There's. See if I can find it quicker. It just. Did you see what happened? It was like suddenly I just. It got corrupted and then it wouldn't open again. So I don't know what happened. Okay, Lynn just sent it to me. All right. Unless my computer went wonkers. And there we go. It's happening. Okay, let me just switch it back.
Yay,
I got it.
Don't lose me.
You know, technology is always one of those kind of crazy things. Okay, share.
And you have so much patience. It's unbelievable.
I've been working on it. Thank you for saying that, because growing up, all I kept hearing was I had no patience.
I admire you. I've been on so many things with you and summits and watching, you know, other people, you know, where something's going on with you guys, and you're telling them what to do. It's hilarious.
All right. I've worked on it. You know, that's my heart math, you know, and it's just like you get to the point where you go, wait a minute, like, what good is it going to do me to get upset? And when we understand the physiology of stress, mm-hmm. right, the physiology of stress is that when you go into a stress mode, you go into what's called the lizard brain, the reptilian brain. And because that's what you're supposed to do, run, fight, jump, get out of the way. But you can't think clearly. You can't figure out technology. You can't, it's still not working. Darn it. I think something's screwy with my computer, unless it's just showing the wrong one. Let me just see. Let me try one more time. Screen sharing has stopped as the shared window closed. Okay, good. So now I'm going to do share screen. We can't think from our reptilian brain. We can't do logical stuff. We can't do technology. We can't calculate spreadsheets. We just can't do any of that stuff from the place where we're trying to run away from tigers, right? And that's what's happening with you, right? You've had so many stresses in your life that you operate from that place, and healing can't come from that place. Do you know what I mean? So that's why, it took me years to develop that skill. So don't be impatient with yourself. It takes years. And I first started learning about heart math when my younger son, who's now 19, almost 19, when he was, and he was quite a handful. Let's just put it that way. He was quite a handful as a kid. And so, what would happen would be, let's just see. Hang on one second while I think this through. And it's not showing up on my, that's the thing, share screen. And now it's going to show my whole screen. I don't want to do that. I want to show all windows. There we go. Now, well, you know, so I would always get just discombobulated trying to, like, deal with, you know, the strong will, the tantrums, and not getting through. It's logical. I just need you to do this, but no. So I learned this technique, and it took me literally years of, like, I'd lay on the floor and go, okay, I'm not going to go break his neck. I'm not going to go scream at him. He's a sweet child. I love this kid, you know, and I have to walk myself through this. I deserve to be mad would be one of my words, right? Did you ever hear you say that? I deserve to be mad. Sure, mm-hmm. I deserve to be mad. Any normal person would be mad in this situation, but you know what? It's not serving me.
Yay.
And it's just taken me a lot of time to get there. And do I not get mad? I still have things I get mad about. Kind of dumb things sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I get mad at that, but I do. We're not never going to be perfect, but it's stopping yourself in the middle of it and remembering to breathe and remembering to find the things you appreciate. So all I was trying to do here was to take this number and change it, take out the decimal point and make it at 181, and then it turns green. So your thyroid actually looks pretty good, except that you do have some antibodies. It's in the low end range. I usually take it when everything looks good and the numbers are there as a warning that you need to really do the things that would protect you from autoimmune disease, which is managing inflammation, managing your fatty acids, managing your stress, guess what? Mm-hmm. You know, getting your gut in order, getting your blood sugar under control, and all of those things, right? And all of those things are going to help. Let me just see if there's any other things in here and what happened, because you said you had a whole bunch of antibodies and insulin and all that tested. White blood cells. red blood cells are a little on the high side. Your hemoglobin is high. It could be that you were dehydrated, but it's multiple times. So it could be a strong dehydration, but it also is a tendency towards, and it could be related to your liver. So something like a, you know, a thrombocytopenia.
I just had a phlebotomy a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Your MCV is a little on the high side. I would suggest looking at your B12 folate status. Your RDW is a little high as well. And we'll see what else you have here. Homocysteine is 9. It's a little higher than I like to see it, but it's still within the range. But that could contribute to thyroid antibody, thyroid receptor issues. But okay, so here's the problem, right? Fasting insulin is 10.8.
Yeah.
Where would you like to see that?
What, 3?
Yeah, 3 would be nice. Between 2 and 5 would be nice. 10.8. So you're overproducing insulin.
Yeah.
You're overproducing it. So for you, I would definitely set aside a time where you can do a strict metabolic reset. Nothing that's going to raise your insulin. Nothing that you're going to require insulin for. Just really keeping it low. All the starches out, all the grains out, the legumes, anything at all that has a carbohydrate component that could raise it for 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
While you take your supplements that are going to help your receptors to heal better and see where it goes. And sleep is critical. There was one study I was looking at, and they took this guy who had fasting blood sugars in below high hundred teens, so like 118, 119. And they put him on a sleep regime of sleeping around 9 hours, 8.5 to 9 hours a night. And within a week, numbers dropped into the 90s. Still not where you want it to be, but heck, that's a 20-point drop just by sleeping.
Yeah.
And then he missed a couple of nights of that sleep. He only slept for 7.5 to 8 hours, and the numbers creeped up again. So we may think, I get plenty of sleep. I get between 7 and 8 hours a night. But if you've got insulin resistance going on, if you're hyperinsulinemia and anemic, it may not be good enough. May not be good enough, right? So it's really focusing. Even if you can't sleep through the night, I can't sleep through the night, so I get up and I watch TV. You lay in bed, you meditate, you listen to Mozart, you listen to meditation tapes.
Mm-hmm.
You do things to keep yourself occupied, but you lay in bed and you make sure you stay in bed for 9 hours a night. Is that something you could do?
Yeah. Well, I used to have like a baby monitor in my room because my mom, you know, diabetic. She's going through I changed her diet. She's back down again. She went off what I told her to eat. Anyway, so I would wake up quite often hearing the pump going off, you know, making sure she's okay. But I took that out, probably in January or so, and released myself from that responsibility.
Great.
And, yeah, I think I'm going to go to bed like at 8 o'clock now instead of 10. So,
give it a try. Just give it a try.
7 and use the bathroom. I come back and actually sleep another hour and a half. But
Yep. That'll help tremendously. Even like to schedule a 3-day sleep vacation. I don't know if you've been through the sleep module yet, but that whole 3-day sleep vacation, I've seen it do wonders for people.
Cassie just told me to do that. Yeah. And I'm like, I can't get away, but you know, I may have to do that.
You don't have to get away. If you can't get away, you do it at home. But you just schedule 3 days in a row where you can stay in bed for 12 hours. You can't do that?
It's impossible in my environment.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like that. So I would have to leave, but I could, you know, seriously, if this doesn't start changing, I will do that. Because this is my life.
Exactly. Great
it's
attitude.
My life.
That's exactly.
And I don't want to end up like my mom.
Yep. Vitamin D can still used to be higher, so whatever you're taking, I would up it. If you're taking 5 or 10,000, then you want to go to 10 or 15,000.
Okay.
And then recheck it in 3 months.
It was 35 a year ago, so I thought this was getting better, but how quickly
it's slow. Honey, it's slow. Vitamin D will go up very quickly if you get the right dose. Very quickly. Right. I've had people go from 8 to 108 in 6 weeks.
Okay, I'll change that then.
Okay. So get your 15. If you're on 10, go to 15, yeah.
Okay.
And then just recheck it in 2 to 3 months. Given how long it took you to go from 46 to 50, I don't think we're at risk for vitamin D excess, okay?
And I had a vitamin D shot, I think.
Oh no, that was
that 50,000 pill or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, the 50,000, yeah. But that's 50,000 in a week, usually what they give you. And that's, you know, I would say more like 15,000 in a day. But it depends on what you've been taking. If that's what you've been taking is 50,000 a week.
No, that's not. No, I was just taking the 5 to 10,000 a day. 5 to 10, it depends.
Yeah, I would be consistent. And if you consistently up your dose and you don't see it budging, it could be that you need a different form. Some people need liquid. Some people do well with the capsules. Some people do well with the lanolin base. Some people do better with those, like the raw food ones, the vitamin code ones. I had actually one person who tried all these D3s and she finally went to a D2 and that's what did it. Like, go figure. Who would expect that? So, D2, which is usually not, but the D2 raised the D3. Go figure. You know, we were shocked, but she was desperate. She was like, I tried all these brands and they're just like barely budging it.
Whatever works.
You got it. You know, and we are our best experiment grounds, and don't be afraid with people to let them know. You're going to use your body. I'm going to teach you how to use your body as an experiment ground. And I don't have all the answers for you. I have lots of questions and a lot of things, and I can interpret what's going on and help you to make good decisions about what to do next. So ANA and antibodies were negative. That's good. Those are, those are usually high, elevated in lupus. FSH of 46 just says, hey, you're in menopause. You probably already knew that.
Well, see, I don't know how to read those. Well, I could have. I lost my sheets from one of the other things. And because of the timing of the test and everything, because I had the uterine ablation 2 years ago, so sometimes I will still get spotting.
Yeah.
And I still feel like I'm having a period, but I don't bleed because it's burned out. And I have that, what is it, like fibroids and stuff that showed up on the last scan and inside, I forgot what they call it. I put it in my, I gave you the ultrasound on that.
Yeah, I'm going to look to some of that now. You guys should be able to see the new screen. Okay, resume share. There we go.
Did you see that? I was worried about the IgG, though, being low. And I was looking through all of our charts and stuff, and I didn't know how, because these are regular doctor's labs compared to, you know, the labs that,
okay. Did you see this on here? Is that not in that? This probably isn't in here. We'll look at your other sheet. Lynn just put what she could into this flow chart to make it easier for me to read. But I'm going to go and, it should be on a new share. I thought I did a share screen. New. And then here's Janine. Share screen. All right. So let me find you. That's Margo. That's your case study. Okay. Here's your case study. The lab. Yeah. So,
and, like, I don't know how to compare, like, regular labs to what functional medicine, like, here.
Yeah.
I thought
we don't have a specific, we don't have specific ranges for some of these because they're specialty tests. But, you know, I always think about it being, if there's a range, it's always nice to be in the middle of the range because you're usually safest if we don't have a specific range. Mm-hmm. But your IgG is low. It's a particular type of antibody that gets secreted. IgGs are a delayed hypersensitivity antibody. So yours are on the low side, not terribly low, but you're just maybe not responding well enough to specific issues, specific immune system challenges. it's not terrible, and it's not something I would be like terribly focused on. Your GADs. Okay, good. That's good. So these here, this IAA and GAD, insulin antibodies and GAD, this is saying you're unlikely to have an autoimmune diabetes.
Yeah, I was happy to see that.
Which is good to see. Yeah. This other stuff, FSH and LH, usually they do that at women who are perimenopausal and are not sure, you know, if some of the symptoms are related to going into menopause. Yours are in a menopause range. You see the numbers?
Yeah.
Unless so, you're ovulating. But if you don't get periods, you weren't ovulating. So.
Well, that's the thing is that I don't know.
What do you mean? Oh, because you had the ablation. You're 52. What was happening before that? Did you?
Well, I had endometriosis. So I had heavy periods, very distended stomach.
Yeah.
You know, I've had fibroids sticking out, and I've had cysts, and now it's just cysts again, follicle cysts, and then regular cysts. And they wanted a hysterectomy, and I said, let me try something. I'm trying to do the seed rotation.
Yeah, but I'm looking at this here, these numbers. FSH 46.8. If you were, there's no other numbers other than postmenopausal that would give you an FSH that high.
So
LH, yeah, if you were ovulating, you would be, but the FSH would show higher as well, would, you know, be more like in the, it'd be in a different range. So. You know, if you had like a 42 LH and a 20 FSH, I'd say, huh, maybe you were ovulating.
Okay.
Right? But you're 46 on FSH, which is clearly postmenopausal. 42 is in postmenopausal as well. So I think this is saying that you're postmenopausal or perimenopausal anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
FSH we already looked at. Estradiol. You know, I'm not a big fan of just simply doing individual sex hormones in blood because really you want to look at the whole pattern. I prefer doing Dutch tests and 24-hour urines. I mean, that number alone, without seeing what your estrone is, estriol, progesterone, testosterone, they all need to be in ratio. So it's a hard number to even know. It's definitely in a postmenopausal range, though. C-peptide, great. You know, so that's just confirming that there's probably not likely to be an autoimmune diabetes. So these are good that you got these done because we usually don't see these. So guys who are, you know, you haven't seen these before, C-peptide, the GAD antibodies, and the anti-islet cell that we saw on the other page are things you would do if you suspected that somebody having an autoimmune diabetes situation, that maybe their numbers, their A1C being high or their fasting glucose being high was related to an autoimmune condition as opposed to insulin resistance. But yours are normal and your insulin is high. So in somebody with an autoimmune diabetes or heading towards autoimmune diabetes, you'd never see an insulin, a fasting insulin like that. It's just way too high for that to be in range, you know? So it's clear that it's an insulin resistance situation. But at least it's clear to me that's an insulin resistance situation. Your Epstein-Barr is negative. Your stimulating immunoglobulin is within the range. Yeah, we looked at all that. Total estrogen 65. So, you know, in that particular case, the total estrogens are actually higher than I would expect for postmenopausal.
It's higher?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, 65. So that could be from the liver, though?
Well, it could be and again, you know, if you want to look at the liver and its relationship to estrogens, you also have to look at metabolites. When we do a Dutch test, which we don't go over in this class, but we do go over that in our NEPT program, the Dutch test will show us all of the different metabolites, and that can tell us how the phase 2 liver detoxification is doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
but overall, I don't
think antibodies.
You have a little bit of antibody to the thyroid.
Okay.
A little bit. You know, it's where was it? I think it was, it's 21. So it's in that range where the lab doesn't consider it abnormal, but heck, how many bullets do you want? You would expect to see a few antibodies because as the thyroid tissue is, you know, dying and then replacing, the antibodies get rid of it, but you wouldn't necessarily want to see it there. And it just says, you know, let's look at the leaky gut, look at the stress response, look at the blood sugar, and that's the stuff you're looking at anyway.
Yeah, and 2 years ago, I didn't show any antibodies from a different doctor for the test, and so that's why I kind of panicked, and I'm thinking, okay, leaky gut, you know, insulin, all this stuff. So.
And what it's saying is you've caught this before you've gotten this out of control where it's going to start killing your thyroid off.
Mm-hmm.
And so just treat it as if when I have people go through the thyroid program, we have a thyroid revive and thrive program for consumers, and we also have a thyroid module in our NEBT program. I say, always assume that you're working with an issue with the receptors, right? Always just do those things that are going to support it anyway, mm-hmm. and you're going to improve your overall health. An anti-inflammatory autoimmune type of a diet is going to help no matter what.
And that's covered in the metabolic reset, basically, right?
And, you know, the stuff in the metabolic reset, you know, if you have and CMDS with leaky gut.
Mm-hmm.
So between those two programs, you're getting your core. You're getting what I consider the base of the pyramid and everything mm-hmm. else. I don't see any obvious big issues going on with thyroid. Adrenal's another one, though. You know, the stress is real common in that. Total iron binding capacity, iron serum. The iron numbers look fine. B12 folate numbers look fine. You know, all this stuff looks fine. Ferritin, a little bit high, but, you know, iron and ferritin are on the high end of the range. So the high end of the optimal range. So it's not suggesting that your liver is involved with hurting that, which is good, right?
I just did that phlebotomy.
Shape. I mean, look at these numbers. Your liver is doing fine.
Yeah.
Liver's doing great.
Yeah.
The alkaline phosphatase is a little low. We talked about that. That's probably zinc. But, you know, for somebody who's had a diagnosis of cirrhosis to have a panel like this, you're on the right track, Janine.
Yeah, I'm glad to have found you because this is just, I share my knowledge with a lot of people who are very sick right now, and they ask me a lot of questions, and, you know, how have you lived so long?
Yeah,
I was given a year to live in 2001, everybody, so
it's
come a long way.
You've come a long way, so congratulations. Keep doing the work. Work on that. You've definitely got some excess insulin going on there. I'd say do the metabolic reset and then look at in CMDS, do the leaky gut stuff and, you know, mm-hmm. just evaluate yourself. Do that full evaluation that we have in CMDS for the digestive tract, figure out which areas most need help mm-hmm. and just work them. You know, the whole goal here is to restore balance mm-hmm. and to just let go of labels. No matter what labels anybody's put on you in the past, mm-hmm. the past is the past, the present is the present, and you have the ability to change it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Good job. You're doing great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So the next ones, we don't have labs, so these should go more quickly. Lynn, would you check to see if there are any questions or comments from anybody at this point? Anybody that has any input or question or anything? Okay, so are they quick, easy questions, or are they long, complicated questions? Okay, yeah, go for them. Oh, right. Mm-hmm. No. That's right. It's harder to get that stuff. If you can't find berberine in there, ask around or look up some kind of local botany thing to find out what plants grow there that are high in berberine. Like here, Oops, somebody's echoing on me. Let me look to see who's... Oh, it wasn't a minute ago, so it sounded like somebody's line had opened. What I would look at... I'm going to mute yourself for a second while I'm answering, and then we can open you up again. I'm going to mute all on here, and then... Okay, unmute yourself. There you go. There you go. Somebody else was unmuted. I would say that, you know, there may be some berberine, natural berberine-containing plants that grow there because the botany changes from country to country. Like in here we have goldenrod, we have golden seal, we have Oregon grape. So are there plants like that that you might be able to add? But given all that, I would love to see some links, or I guess I'll just do a search on that. Just because the internet is floating with stuff, I want to see science behind it, right? I want to see why, what's going on. So I would love to read some of that stuff and see what makes sense to me in terms of developing insulin resistance as a result of being on an insulin resistance reversing diet. So happy to look at that. A lot of times there are diet wars. This person has this diet and that person has that diet and we want to fight about it. The truth of the matter is everybody's individual. So someone may develop some issues with a low carb diet or a high fat diet or a high protein diet or a low protein diet, and everybody's a little bit individual. So I think to make flaming generalizations is not so good. People always say to me, well, you're against fruit. Fruit is a good food. I'm like, no, I'm not. I want people to eat as much fruit as their body allows to maintain a healthy gut flora, not overfeeding yeasts and beasts and things that grow down there, but also maintaining good blood sugar levels. So, you know, fine, eat the pineapple if it works for you, but don't eat it. If it doesn't, then temporarily take it out. So I'd love to see some of that. If you have any really good articles you want to point me to, go for it. Otherwise, I'll just have to put it on my list and in the next few weeks to take a look and see what I can find and see what my interpretation is. There's a lot of what I call pseudoscience out there. There's a lot of people saying nobody should take iodine because iodine is evil and can cause Hashimoto's. That's not true. Iodine is a central nutrient. Without it, we can't make thyroid hormone. Excess iodine can cause thyroid problems. So we have to be looking at each individual to see what the right amount is. There is the thing about don't eat cruciferous vegetables raw because they're going to cause hypothyroidism. Truth of the matter is, lots of studies out there, they don't cause it, but they can aggravate it in somebody who is already out of balance if they also have an iodine deficiency, right? And the same thing with iodine, it has to be done. It's in the absence of selenium where iodine becomes a problem for the thyroid. So that's why I teach the science. I teach the biochemistry so that you can understand how things work and not make generalizations, but be able to figure things out for yourself. So it sounds like the issue with you is that you are getting high sugars in the morning and you're trying to figure out why. Well, if you're only sleeping 5.5 hours, that could be it. So if your sugars maintain better throughout the day than they do in the morning, then there's a stressor happening overnight. And if you're only getting 5.5 hours of sleep, that could be it. And I know for a fact, I've tested this on myself. I can go to bed and get a really good night's sleep and wake up and my blood sugar is 65. I can eat the same way and get a poor night's sleep. And when I wake up, my blood sugar is 89, sometimes 90. Right. So it's really a matter as the sleep is super important. So I would really focus on the sleep and just look at each of the areas when you're working with yourself or with a client. Look at each of the areas, the stress, the sleep, the timing, the fitness and the nutrition. And don't make one king over the other. You know, we say, oh, I'm doing perfectly. I'm running and I'm doing burst training and I'm eating a low glycemic diet. What about the other three? I used to think 4 out of 5 ain't bad because I used to try to get away with lack of sleep for myself. Discovered that's not true. All of them have to be in balance. Some of them are going to be more important for you. So it's a matter of finding what that is. So I go through the process, take yourself through the metabolic reset if you haven't already done so. Take yourself through it. Be checking your sugars every, you know, 15 minutes like we recommend, charting it all out and see what you can figure. Because when you take yourself through it and you do it very fanatic, and I don't mean fanatically in a bad sense, but I mean fanatically and very conscientiously, then you're going to be better in interpreting what's going on with somebody else. And yeah, we're not always going to have the answer. Some people who wake up with high glucose in the morning do so because they ate a food that got their glucose up too high and then it went too low during the night and the body produced cortisol and adrenaline to raise it up. They woke up, their blood sugar high. For some people, the sugar goes high during the night because of some stress that happened in childhood. We talked earlier about ACEs, the adverse childhood events. Somebody was molested in the middle of the night. Someone used to wake up at 2 a.m. when her dad came home drunk and was beating her mother. That's a stress that got imprinted in the system. And there's fear about staying asleep. For some who've had a lot of children and had to get up in the middle of the night to nurse them and been up erratically, it takes years sometimes to erase that imprint and that pattern that the body got into. For some, it's parasites. Parasites lay their eggs in the middle of the night. And sometimes people wake up with high sugars because they have parasites. So there's a lot of reasons for it. And I just kind of dissect it for yourself. But sleep's a biggie. Sleep's a biggie. So like I said to Janine, even if you can't stay asleep for more than the 5.5 hours, stay in bed, resting, relaxing, meditating, playing meditation tapes, playing so soothing things, and keeping yourself calm. So if you're awake, don't lay awake going, wish I could fall asleep, I wish I could fall asleep, I'm so stressed out, I can't fall asleep. Say, oh, I'm not falling asleep right now. What can I do that's a really productive use of my time? Let me play some meditation tapes. Let me play some motivational tapes. What my son does is he finds boring podcasts and he plays his boring podcasts when he can't fall asleep and he falls right to sleep. So that's that. Somebody told me they read my stuff before they go to sleep. I'm like, wait a minute, am I that boring? He said, no, it's complicated and my mind just turns off and I fall asleep. Great, whatever it takes. If you have to listen to me to help you fall asleep, go for it. I try to keep things funny and light. Yep. Ooh. Ooh. Wow. Perfect. And it's always better to use something that's local and native than to ship something in from another part of the world. So that's awesome. That's awesome. That might help. Great. All right. So let's move on to Nora. Nora has submitted a 5'10" male, 48 years old. He's a telecommuter. He's married and has 2 children. And his health concerns are low body energy level, feeling tired several times during the day, gradual increase in mean glucose level from 160 to 230 in the last 6 months, slight hand tremors appear occasionally. So let's look at what's going on for him and let's see if we can get Nora pointed in the right direction on what the next step would be. Okay, can you open up her line? I know I saw her. Oh, you can't. I saw her on Instant Teleseminar. Is she off of there now? I'll open her up here. Let me see. Manage participants. Nora. There's Nora. Okay, unmute. Hi, Nora. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, good. I'm glad you're open because you can share some extra stuff about this person. Yes, beautiful. So it looks like he does medical treatments for diabetes. So is he on medication now for the diabetes?
Yes.
A little bit later. Okay. Okay, so he's seeing a gastroenterology and diabetes specialist. So no food intake with added sugar. So he's off of all added sugar. Is that what you meant by that?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. hello, Chris. I'm not hearing you so much about Chris. I think, of course, he would have to get up on 5:30. He has breakfast at 5:30 every morning.
Do you know what he eats for breakfast? Okay, so switch his breakfast. He's not getting any protein. I mean, he's getting protein, but not enough. And he's getting more carb than he should. Okay, so look at the breakfast recommendations. You know, it could be almond milk. If it's a container of almond milk that you buy in a container has very little protein in it, very little fat, really. It's really a lot of carbs. So I wouldn't use the containers of almond milk, but you might switch them to hemp milk. That he can make himself, or even the containers of hemp milk are definitely going to be higher protein. If you can get him to try some of the chia porridge or hemp porridge or any of the breakfasts that we give you in the Sweet Spot book, you might be able to do better. But yeah, I would say not. Even the greens, even making himself a big stir fry or leftovers from the dinner from the night before. Is he vegetarian?
No.
Yeah, so he could even eat like a piece of fish in the morning with some greens, but get him on greens. He's getting fiber, but it's from bran, right? All bran, you said?
Yes.
Oat bran, you said, right? Oh, all bran. All bran's from wheat. That's not gluten-free. So he's not gluten-free. Right. And, you know, people think they're gluten-free because they gave up spaghetti and bread, right? Right. So he's not gluten-free. That's a biggie. Do you know what else shifted over the last 4 months? Did he start changing his diet after the numbers went up, or was it that? Stress level can go up. It could be something that's been building for a while. There could be an inflammation somewhere in his body that's getting worse, an infection. I'd ask a lot about his gut health. Has that stuff changed? Has he traveled to a foreign country where he might have picked up a parasite or something? No. Mm-hmm. He lives in Mexico. All right. So, you can deal with all that stuff. So all of those things, have you done a complete health history with them? Okay. So I would be looking at his diet and like really think in terms of these five key elements, right? You've already identified his stress is high. What can you do? Can you teach him to do heart math? Can you teach him to do whatever it is he might do, he might be willing to do in terms of the stress? Great. So there you go. So looking at that, the stress, like I said, could be a physiologic stress somewhere else. So doing a complete health history, what else? It sounds like he hasn't had surgeries or anything like that, so that's good. What's his sleep doing? How's his sleep? He's not sleeping well. And why? Is that something he's been, the cumulative effect. So that could be, like, he may not have changed anything over these last 4 months, but it's like the cumulative effect of the sleep is finally catching up to him. So I'd be looking at what is he eating at dinner that could be triggering a high blood glycemic. Okay. Is he overweight? Let's go back to his weight. He's, no, 5'10", 163, so he's not overweight. It could be a food allergen, that he's eating something that he has a food sensitivity to and that would cause a craving. Have you had him, have you talked to him at all about testing his blood glucose throughout by doing the every 15 minutes after meals to see what might be triggering? Yeah. Yeah, and to have him do it at least on the weekend. Or he can do it first thing in the morning. He can do it before his breakfast, see what it is. He can do the difference between first waking up and right before breakfast. But if he's eating immediately, then it's not going to be different. But then he can look at it before he leaves work, for work. So he finishes his breakfast. So at least he does it before he leaves for work. Like, just think through and like walk through him. Like through his day with him. What do you do next? What do you do next? And you think in terms of, oh, you can measure it here, you can measure it here. But then say, look, let's just measure it on the weekend. Let's just see what it's like on the weekend. But eat the way you would during the week. Because that's what's most likely triggering it, since it's 5 days versus two. And it may be similar. A lot of people eat the same way on the weekend. But I would do it that way. All right? Good. Yay. He did in the past. When did he quit eating sugar and soft drinks? Okay, really? Wow. And in the past, is he drinking alcohol? Have you done any labs on him to see what his hemoglobin A1C or his insulin is, fasting insulin? Those would be good things to look at. Right. And that'll help you determine, is he someone who has had, he's going into pancreatic failure now, and that's why it suddenly happened. Does he have antibodies that might be attacking his pancreas and it was fine up to a certain point and then it started going down? Or is it a true insulin resistance issue, in which case his fasting insulin might be high, his postprandial might be high, hemoglobin A1C would be high. Hemoglobin A1C could be high in either way, but if he's not secreting enough insulin, that's a different situation than the labs would help you to know that. Yeah, the labs would help you to know that. Yeah, but if you can get him to do the glucose testing on the weekend, that would be good. He does. What kind of fast food does he consume once a week? I mean, does he eat at McDonald's or something like that? Oh, so he's conscientious. Okay. Oh, he works from home, even better, because he can control it during the day. So going back to he works during the day, it's not like he's at the office where he's, like, sitting at his desk and people are looking at him like he's something from Mars when he pokes his finger, right? He can do it. And you can just teach him to set a timer so that – because how long does it take to take your blood sugar? Like, seconds, right? They don't want to do it, but you can help them with a regime and tell them, look, it's not forever. We just want to get really understand what's going on here. What kind of a blood sugar imbalance do you have so you can help him? And if it turns out it is, looks like it's insulin resistance, his fasting insulins are high or, you know, not, at least not low, then you can put him on a metabolic reset. I mean, it sounds like he's pretty strict as it is and he's disciplined. So if you just actually make some changes there, I think it could be good. Yeah?
I haven't seen a lot of things that you mentioned.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Let's see if there's anything else in here. I think that's it, right? Yeah, so have him do a food diary if you don't already know what he eats. And then you can look at the food diary and just based on what you know, help him to just make simple swaps. Starting with breakfast. Okay. And then he's eating so late, right? So, because he clearly must go to bed early because he gets up at 5. So, yeah, yeah. And go slow, you know, just go with one change at a time. There are some people that you can sense that all I have to do is just give them 20 things to do and they'll just do it. And other people where you have to go, give them one thing at a time, one swap, one swap, one swap. You don't want to overwhelm people and have them run away.
Sure. So where would you start? Would you start with the breakfast?
Yeah, I would start with the breakfast. I would start with, you know, just making sure he has a really good protein breakfast. I would start making sure that he's getting enough water? All the basics, right? Is he drinking half his body weight in fluid ounces of water? Is he eating his greens? Is he eating starches? It sounds like he's off of sugar, but is he still eating maybe white rice or stuff like that, tortillas? Good. Well, he's really disciplined.
Yes.
Okay.
That's why he's
frustrated. Absolutely. I would get more numbers then.
Sure.
You get more numbers. Yeah. Because it's easy. You know, somebody presents to you and they're eating, you know, really crappy stuff, like a standard American diet. It's so easy to just swap things out and get them moving. It's not easy from their perspective. From our perspective, we know that we can get dramatic improvements. But with something like this, you're going to have to dig to see what's really going on. Okay?
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye. I think we have one more. Yeah, we do. And this is Janice. Is Janice on? Do you know if Janice is on, Lynn? Okay. I'm looking to see if there's any. Okay. Where's my chat? I'm going to look to see if there's anybody chatting. All right. Well, Denise, if you're on, raise your hands. Star two. Nope. All right. I'm just going to go through it. I'm just going to go through this one. Okay. Go for it. Okay. Oh, okay. That doesn't always mean anything. We have a lot of pseudonyms on there. All right. Well, I'm just going to go through. And, Denise, if you're here, somehow let us know. You can open up your line on if you're on the phone. No, you wouldn't be on the phone on here. So you can open up your line. Make sure it's on make sure it's on the mode on Instant Teleseminar that people can open their line, because I think if they do a star 6 or 7, they can open their line if we have it on Q&A mode. Do you see that up at the top? It says put them on. I'm having a hard time finding my way back to that screen because I have so many screens open.
So what do you want to do?
Yeah, if you look there and it says Q&A, yeah, all guests are muted, but they can open their own line. So if you're on the phone on Instant Teleseminar and you're trying to talk and we're not seeing you, do a star 7 and just talk, and that'll open up your line. Okay? And if you're on Zoom, you can, there's a little, if you hover over by your name, you can just say unmute, and it'll unmute you. Okay? And in the meantime, I'm just going to go through it because there's some good stuff, and we'll just let Denise know that she was handled. Let's see, it's 9:30, so it's like 2 hours into the call. Okay? All right. All right, let me move this little box for. This is why when I go back from one to the other, it's challenging. I think we should just move these calls to Zoom in general, just because I can't move that thing out of the way. So let me see if I can get this out of the way. Are you guys still seeing the share on Zoom? Do you see it? Okay, good. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and just go through this one. And then if there's any questions, we can handle them. So Denise is, let's see if it's her, or she's got a 56-year-old male, 165 pounds. Diet is carbs and meat, lunch and dinner. Symptoms, sluggish, sleepy, tired. Legs tingle sometimes. Nausea in the morning, can't focus, indigestion, constipation sometimes. No symptoms when eating green leafy vegetables and salads. All right, that's the only case I have. The answer that I would have is, guess what? He has no symptoms when he eats right. Eat green leafy vegetables and salads. I don't have enough information to say otherwise, but it sounds like, you know, just a diet cleanup for this guy is going to be a tremendous thing. And a lot of times what we do is we get these folks who, they see what they need to do, and they tell you, oh, I do great as long as I don't eat this food. Can you help me? Sure, don't eat that food. doctor, I don't have a headache unless I hit my head over the head with a hammer. What should I do? Stop hitting yourself over the head with a hammer. So we have to teach our people to stop hitting themselves over the head with a hammer. And because they look around and they see their friends and relatives doing the same things they're doing, and maybe their friends and relatives don't yet have symptoms, they think there must be something wrong with them because when they eat crap, they feel like crap. But in reality, that's just normal. You eat crap, you feel like crap. So really working with people, and it's tough sometimes because they're not ready to make a change. And you go slowly with them. You see what swaps you can do, what simple swaps you can do. You get them to feel success, and then you get them to tune into how they feel that way and try to get them tuned into, is it worth it? Right? For me, as long as I don't eat junk, I feel fine. My blood sugar stays managed. I have great energy. Oh, great. Well, why do I want to eat that, the crap that's going to, why do I want to go back to ice cream? Right? Because it, there's something else missing. So work with people and work with them where they're at. And yeah, if they tell you that they feel great when they eat a certain way, then you encourage them to eat that way. So just bottom line, when you're working with people with this insulin resistance situation, you want to start by really getting a good history. What's going on? How long have the issues been going on? What was happening right before these issues have gone on? What have they done so far to try to fix the situation? What's worked? What hasn't worked? And then what are they eating? What are they drinking? What's the timing? How are they moving? How are they sleeping? Don't discount the sleep. People will say, I'm not sleeping. I'm only sleeping 5 hours a night. What herbs can I take? Well, it's an issue of what is going on to prevent the sleep, because the issue is we're not going to give you stuff so that you can not sleep and feel good. We're going to give you stuff. We're going to help you to rebalance. And so you go through each of those five elements and you look for the one that's most out of balance for them, where you think you're going to get the biggest bang for the buck, and you work with it. The easier things for people is, when usually, not always, when you say, look, let's just push your eating time back. Don't eat right before bed. Eat an hour before bed. Oh, let's now eat 2 hours before bed. Okay, let's eat 3 hours before bed. The other thing is the spacing of the meals. Just gradually start to increase the spacing of the meals. Remove the top allergens. Remove the stuff that's bad. And just follow the process. And if you follow the process, yeah, there are going to be situations where you got to run some labs, you're not sure. Especially, we talked a bunch, a couple of times tonight, about the situation where someone might be, it's possibility of the autoimmune. And if that's the case, then you really just do need to, that's where you study. You look at the numbers and you go, is this really type 2? Is this really, well, not type 2 because they're not necessarily diabetic, but is this really insulin resistance, or is this a person heading into an autoimmune situation? And I've worked with that before. I worked with somebody who came in and he clearly had been having problems for a long time with his blood sugar. He was on multiple oral medications and they weren't working anymore. When they say, you know, I'm on these medications, but they don't seem to be working, they don't seem to be bringing my sugars down, that's when the light bulb goes on and say, this might be a situation where there's antibodies and they're attacking. And you start looking at that. So we've given you what you need in the program. It may feel overwhelming sometimes. There's so much information. But just step by step, and always go back. I studied this insulin resistance herbal class once many, many years ago. And I put it in my car and I was listening a lot to it. And I listened to those tapes like 4 or 5 times, to the point where I stopped listening when I knew exactly what was coming, that there was going to be a little throat clearing here, and then there was going to be a joke here, and then there were, so I knew, I think I got this, right? But over and over again, because every time you listen, you're going to get a little bit something new, right? So that's it for the cases. I'm going to just stop the share. Close that. I'm going to stop share. I'm going to go back. Absolutely.
And this is because this is something I'm really starting to realize. I, as you know, just kind of have a tendency to give away information when people talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just starting to really and you go, oh, you know, if this is who you is, and I'd love to work with you, and this is my program.
Yes.
And so I just really want to encourage you to learn all these things through this program, not to give it away, partly because
people don't
give the value.
Yep. Yep.
And so I really encourage you to learn all of this, to give yourself value, and not give away the store of your knowledge.
Mm-hmm. And that's the very, it comes from an unselfish place. Because if you're sitting with somebody at dinner and you meet somebody and they're the wife of somebody that your husband knows and you're just having a casual conversation, and they start talking about their health issues. If you start spewing off, oh, it could be this and you should do this and you should do this, it's overwhelming to them. And they're not going to be able to act on it. And they're only going to hear the parts they want to hear. And then they may do just the parts they want to hear, but not get results. And they'll just go, oh, that doesn't work. Right? So I think what Lynn has to say is well taken. You give them small sound bites. Oh, I've worked with lots of people that way. Wow, what you're describing sounds like you may have some issues with blood sugar balance. Oh, I don't have that. I don't have diabetes. My mother has diabetes, but I don't. Oh, there's a clue. Right? And you go, well, it's not necessarily diabetes. Did you know that you can actually assess that when a person is on their way to diabetes, probably 20 years before they actually get it? And wouldn't you rather know 20 years before and be able to do things to prevent it than actually get it after a lot of the damage has been done? I can talk to you about that. I'd love to talk to you about that. You know, dinner here is not the right place for it, but why don't we set up a time to talk and I'll help you. And then you can be in a situation where you're not caught in a situation where you don't have enough information to really help. The biggest thing about working with clients is you've got to do a thorough intake, because you can't just assume based on one or two symptoms that you can give them a few herbs or a few foods to do and get results, because that's allopathic medicine. What you really want to do is be able to know enough about them to be able to assess what's going on and what some of the underlying roots are. When did it first start? You've heard me ask a lot of those questions tonight. When did it first start? What was happening right before that? What kind of stress in the life? What kind of supplements are they taking? What kind of foods are they eating? Did they travel? And there's a whole series of that. We have a module in NEPT that's probably 12 hours long of videos on teaching you how to take a proper history. We gave a free version of that away, NEP, what's it called, nutritionalendocrinology.com, as part of that. I think I gave it to you guys somewhere in IRSPT, but if I didn't, go to nutritionalendocrinology.com and download the free success kit that I have there. And part of that is what I call the ninja history-taking skills. It's just a basic one. We go through a lot more depth in it in the program. But that's a really good thing for you to be looking at, is what kind of questions that you can ask, because people want to know answers. And what they're used to is the 15-minute office visit, which is very common in today's PPO, HMO world with managed care. The doctors aren't given enough time to spend to really get to know people. The more you can get to know them and the more you can connect, the more you're going to help them to get to the heart of it. And very often you're going to find that the heart of it is actually not just what they're eating and not just what they're breathing, but it's what they're thinking and feeling. And I know Lynn and I were on a call earlier today with our year-long coaching program called our Energy Recharge Inner Circle. And we had about six people on that call. And was there anybody that we just talked about nutrition with, Lynn? I'm trying to think. There wasn't really. It was so many of them was their impressions of themselves and some of those past issues and these energetic blocks that are coming up and this emotional blocks and the stress response, and it kept coming up. It wasn't like I intended it. It wasn't like that was my goal for the day, but we didn't talk nutrition all that much, and you're going to find that to be the case with a lot of your clients, that in order for the nutrition to work, You've got to really help them to clear the limiting beliefs, the attitudes, the not good enough, the worthiness, lack of worthiness that they've picked up as they went through their life, and helping them to find ways to heal it can be a phenomenal, phenomenal thing. Did you want to add anything to that, Lynn? Unmute. I muted you. Yeah. And not to say they don't need to change the habits if they're having bad habits, but no matter how many habits they change and herbs they take and supplements they take, a lot of times that's not going to work until, yep, you have to do all of it. No. Right. Better out than in, right?
Exactly. But your body is just
Right. And it just brings me back to like Nora's person compared to one of the other people who had not changed the diet, right, so much. That guy, he's 10 years off sugar, but there's still some things going on with his sugars, right? So that makes me think, well, we want to rule out both ends of it. You know, what are the stresses? What's the emotional pieces? But we want to make sure that this isn't a pancreatic failure. So it's really important because it's overlooked a lot in medicine. And it's not that we're going to practice medicine without a license or diagnose somebody, just really avoid the temptation to diagnose somebody, but to be able to say, you know, let's try to differentiate whether you're making too much insulin or too little insulin. There you go. There's no diagnosis there. It's just, oh, let's just see. It could be you're making too much insulin or too little. And there are a few tests we can run to figure that out because we'll address it differently. The diet changes, the lifestyle changes, the supplements you're going to do are going to be different. Compared, depending on which. That's a nice way to say it versus, oh, let's just go see if you have autoimmune diabetes. Don't say that to anybody, you know, if you don't want to get in trouble. Unless you're an MD and you're working with this person face to face, I wouldn't say something like that. And I wouldn't even say that anyway. I would always just say, let's look at, we're always talking function with people, not diagnosis, not putting them in boxes. Oh, well, let's just see, are you making too much of this or too little? You know how your thyroid can make too much hormone or too little? Your stomach can make too much acid or too little acid. Well, your pancreas can make too much insulin or too little. Let's just see if we can find out where it is so we can support your body to help it move towards making the right amount and healing so that it can produce the right amount. And the more you practice the languaging around it, number one, the safer you're going to be in terms of people not, you know, accusing you of practicing medicine without a license. But more than that, it's going to gain you the trust of people because they know you're not, you know, trying to put them in a box, give them a label. And even when they have a label, you know, people will say to me, oh, does that number mean I have Hashimoto's? I'm like, Hashimoto's is just a word. It's just the name of a box. What I want to know is your thyroid functioning beautifully without any interference? Or are there external interferences, you know, like medications and pesticides and bromine and chlorine? Or is it functioning abnormally, you know, not functioning optimally because of internal interferences? endotoxins from poorly digested food, overgrowths of bacteria in the gut, metals that are being stored from years ago that are stored in your body, or antibodies that are attacking it. And when you start to look at all the different things that you can work with people on, in this particular program, we're looking at blood sugar. But when you look at all the different things you can work with people on, you want to think of them in terms of balance. How do we get that particular area of the body and then the whole body into a state of homeostasis and balance where it's the Goldilocks principle, right? I love the Goldilocks principle. Not too little, not too much, just right. And that's where we're trying to get people to, is that just right state emotionally, physically, biochemically, and energetically. Anybody have anything they want to say or add? You can do it in the chat. You can do it on the Zoom chat because I've got that in front of me, but nobody's using that. They're probably using the other chat. Let's see. There's too many chats on here. let's see if my chat shows anything. And then I'll go to the Q&A to see.
There is somebody who has their line open, and again, it's the same person from Raymond, New Hampshire.
Okay. Eugene Brooks, Raymond, New Hampshire. Hi. Phone number 603. I hear a mumbling in the background. Maybe they don't realize, maybe they're like listening in and don't. And, huh. Oops, just went away. It's just the hand just went down anyway. Okay. Well, the only hands, I still see that line open, but.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Who's this?
It's Robin.
Oh, Robin. Brooks.
Yeah.
Eugene. Okay, Raven, New Hampshire.
That was,
okay.
That was my husband's phone number, so.
Oh. Okay.
I'm actually on my way to go visit my kids before I come to Spring and Vitality.
Yay! Did you get back from Hawaii?
I did. Oh, my God. That was wonderful. Wonderful.
Oh,
yeah. Wonderful. Yeah.
Wonderful.
So I missed a lot of stuff, and I feel a little bit behind. But
there's no such thing.
And now I'm ready to go out again, but here's the funny part is I was taking a bath while I was listening to half of this stuff. Because it's like I got to get to bed, but I'm like, how am I going to do all of this? I'm like, you know what? Get in the tub now.
Oh, you're funny.
It is. So I did have a couple of questions. One of them was just from the beginning, like the melatonin form or the different types for like how it might react differently for different people.
Yeah. So there's different forms. Like there's liquid. You can get a liquid. I think Premier Research has a liquid. Me, personally, I'm a big fan of liquids just because you can start with the lowest dose and titrate up to the dose you need, as opposed to putting the sledgehammer in and saying, here's 5 milligrams. You may not need 5 milligrams. You might have been just fine with 2. So I like to get liquids so that you can titrate them up. And that's true of anything where we can actually find a liquid. I like to do it that way.
Okay, that makes sense. And then the person, I think it was one of the first persons that spoke, because it had the psoriasis and all the other issues,
yep,
and and then so part of the thing that just kind of struck me, and it's just a question, because she was taking a lot of supplements, and I don't think you went over on what the reason was where all the supplements came in, but can diet play a role into disrupting supplements and whether they work and how much you need to take or whatever? So like if she went on an anti-inflammatory, would she need less of those, or would she be able to start to reduce some of those too? Or
yeah, that's a great question. So yeah, the diet, the supplements are a supplement to the diet. So as much as you can
because some stuff can rob you, right? Like some foods can rob you of other things, like right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So certainly, like acidic forming foods are going to rob the tissues of the ability to actually heal. We need an alkaline-forming residue in the tissues. inflammatories, right? Anti-inflammatories. Too many omega-6s are going to disrupt the omega-3s. So there's all these little things that you have to go through. And we have, you know, a whole module on nutrition. We give you lots and lots of resources. So you really want to just look at that. I like to get people on the least amount of supplements possible. And it is possible that you can be taking too many supplements and they can be interfering with each other. The reason when I talk to Margo, a lot of people say, I'm just taking this because I read about it here, and I'm taking this because I read about it here. Do you know if it's working? I don't know. I can't tell. Margo specifically said that she, almost everything she was taking, she actually felt an effect from. Now, does that mean that she has to continue to take all of them? No. Does that mean that, you know, one thing might be able to be backed off as another thing is moved up? But like I said to her, this isn't the forum for us to like go through every one of her supplements because they're all for different reasons. And we don't do that. We'd more do that on maybe an ERC case study call where we give everybody like a 45 minute slot to do a case and then really look at everything for all the regards. But for this particular case, she did have a lot. And it was very tempting for me to want to dig into every single thing she was doing, but I knew it wouldn't give anybody else a chance to get their questions answered. So,
right.
But that's the thing, that some of the supplements could actually be interfering with the way the working of another supplement, similar to how drugs can interfere with each other.
Right. That was going to be my next question. It would be the same thing. Is it's like, so if you're taking, you know, the pharmaceutical meds like metformin or something like that, and it lowers your blood sugar, that doesn't necessarily mean that your body is functioning because it's masking.
No.
So sometimes supplements can do the same thing if we overuse them, correct?
That they could mask something. Yeah. So if we're taking a lot of anti-inflammatories without really looking to see why is the person inflamed,
mm-hmm.
then that's really a Band-Aid. And sometimes we need it. If we're taking like, I don't know, black cohosh or any of a number of different formulations that work for some people for hot flashes without really looking at why do they have the hot flashes, there could be some serious underpinnings going on that we're missing. And generally, those kind of things aren't going to work in the long haul. We're not looking at the root. I like to look at the root being, if you've seen my pyramid, right? At the base of my pyramid is digestion and then blood sugar. And oftentimes, just by addressing the imbalances in digestion and blood sugar, because we're addressing the underlying habits and foods and things, that can take away some of the stress of the things above it. And maybe it doesn't reduce it 100%. But if you go right to the hot flashes and try to just address the hot flashes without realizing that there's some liver dysfunction, and the liver dysfunction is because the gut is not functioning properly and there's a leaky gut and all these toxins are getting into the bloodstream and stressing the liver. If we don't address all that and we just do things to address the sex hormones, it's a temporary solution. And what's worse is that there could be a fire that burns in another part of the house. Right? So if we just go and just put out a fire in one place, like say it's an electrical fire and it's coming out of one of the wall outlets and you just put it out in one room and then you go back to sleep, that fire may be in the whole circuitry of the house and it's going to come out somewhere else and the house can burn down. So similar in the body, like there's symptoms that are core and then there's symptoms that are secondary. And we can address symptoms. Like somebody's running around with a headache. For God's sake, help them get rid of the headache while you're working on the cause. Because it's really, you can't do anything with a headache, right? But what's it? Is it a liver headache? Like liver stagnation headache? Is it a headache related to the digestive function? Is it a headache because they've got a tooth infection that needs to be dealt with, right? So there's so many things.
But you get rid of the symptoms, like, temporarily to help them so they get to the next level to figure out what's really going on. But
exactly.
You've got to relieve
really
some of the pain.
Exactly. Because it's hard to make changes. Like if somebody's severely depressed and you're talking to them about, you know, drinking almond milk instead of like seriously, they're like, I care less. I just don't want to feel this way. Like they can't make the changes when they're in a really severe state. So we work on some symptom stuff, which is why we incorporate a lot of that. Here's some of the things you can do for symptom, but what's really the cause? If somebody just says, oh yeah, I'm going to reverse my insulin resistance. I'm going to take chromium and magnesium and DHA and berberine, and that's going to solve the problem. But that's increasing the sensitivity, yes. But if we're still eating M&Ms, you may have a temporary improvement in the blood sugar numbers, but she's still got the damaging effects of the M&Ms. Right?
Correct.
So we have to look at the symptom management as being a temporary solution while we're working on fixing the underlying cause.
Okay. Then the only thing I would like to do is to acknowledge you for, I've been following you for, you know, for probably like over 9 years.
Yes.
And I've been trying to get into your program like for so long. And then just because of my own stress and trauma that I've gone through, like it stops me, but I would have to say your program in the last 2 years, you've grown like even more to look like deeper beyond like pharmaceuticals, food, like whatever. You seem to, and I, for me, it's helped me more that you've gone into or you employed people that and coaches that are, that bring more to the table besides just looking at,
right?
Like, I guess is it the physical? So it's more the mental because
yeah, we're looking at the mental, emotional, and yeah. spiritual, energetic levels because all of those things play in.
Yeah, and then that's for me, that's where it's affected me the most, and that's where I've been making the most growth because I didn't really, when I came into the program, I didn't have any medical issues, but then because of the traumas that I've been through, I started to get physical effects, and mm-hmm. I couldn't break through those barriers until I worked with Jean and Jane with the energy work, and all of a sudden it just shifted, yeah. and it just keeps progressing. So I just want to say thank you so much for you know, everything that you do and going deeper and deeper to find out what really the root cause of what some medical illnesses are because it's amazing on, I mean, I feel like if not yet, learned this too, when I finally accomplish everything that I need to accomplish to be a health coach or whatever, I think I'm going to have so much more empathy and understanding because I never had any issues before, and now I understand that there's layers and layers and layers and layers of what causes sickness and illness. So I gotta say,
and you are going to be an awesome coach. I already see it. You know, I saw that from the time I first met you and we started conversing, and you've just gotten out of your own way now, right?
I still got some.
You're still
I
there,
still
right? Yeah. But you're getting out of your own way.
Yep.
And that's what I see so many times. I see it in my health coaches. I see it in my clients that if we just can get them out of their own way, they're going to flourish, right? And
exactly.
Some of it is the languaging. Like I called Janine on and Janine was a great sport about talking about letting go of labels, right? When we let go of labels and we don't put ourselves into a box, we don't limit, right? Think outside the box, that term, think outside the box. Don't put yourself in a box like, I have Hashimoto's, I have PTSD, I have, cardiovascular issues, I have, you know, metabolic syndrome. You know, you're a person who's displaying symptoms of an underlying imbalance that the medical profession calls ABC. That's what it really is. But really, it's an underlying imbalance, and your imbalances are a little different from somebody else's. Yours might be 80% emotional, energetic, and 20% physical, but the physical comes from those imbalances. So that maybe you're abusing yourself with something because of this energetic thing. And so then that their part of it is still physiologic. And somebody else might be 90% the physiologic because maybe they have some genetic imbalances. Maybe they had some really old stuff where they were put on crazy medication that suppressed their immune system. And they're 90%, but they still have that 10%. And it's all a matter of us working as health coaches, as professionals, as practitioners, to help people to really see the obstacles. That's what I used to tell people. It's like, I'm looking for your boulders so I can get the freaking boulders out of your way. Okay? But if you don't identify the boulders and where they are, it's hard to move them.
No, exactly.
Yeah, so congratulations. And for what, for those of you who may not know, what Robin's talking about is a program we have called the Energy Recharge Inner Circle, Energy Recharge Coaching. We call it different things. And it's a year-long program where we take people in and we take them through, like, the whole process of getting them in balance. And we have coaches. Some of you are on the call. Some of the coaches in that program are in our practitioner training programs. And it's like an internship that you get to be the practitioner, and then you graduate to a residency. And all the while, you know, you're working with the clients in this program and learning the strategies of, you know, it's not just about the food. It's about the food, The food is big. It's not just about the food. There's so much more to it.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, yeah, I'm sorry that no one knew who I was. But it's because I couldn't get on the computer. But
well, good for you. I'm glad that you're I'm glad that you had a great time in Hawaii, and that I can't wait to see you at SIV next week.
Yeah, I can. I'm so excited, yes.
Yay.
It's my favorite thing ever because you get to be spoiled with all this great food and don't have to think about it.
I know. That's what I love, too. But I have a lot of work to do. You don't, yeah. Your price is you plunk down a few dollars to come and have fun and enjoy it. My price
I know.
Is weeks and
you
months.
You probably put more work into that than you do all year long, maybe.
A lot. It's a lot of work. But I love it. I really do. And I love just playing around. I've laid it out. I'm working on my bed today because my desk is all crowded and small. And I have all these index cards of all the topics I want to be covering and all the orders. And, you know, I'm just rearranging things and writing notes on it. It's much easier to spread out on a big bed than it is on a desk. So I'm just looking around me and I'm like, oh, there's these pink cards and blue cards. And it's just going to come together in this flow. And here's the thing, as practitioners, you know, get in front of people and talk. Like, just start doing it, even if you don't feel comfortable. Go into your library, go into the neighborhood, go to the school and say, hey, I'd like to do a little talk to help the teachers to prevent the after lunch slump in their kids or the ADD that they get, and just talk to them. Just get out and do these little talks. If you're too afraid to do it in person, do it on a webinar. Just, you know, free webinar software.
Or just challenge them to the Facebook challenge.
Or the Facebook challenge?
Yeah, remember you did that? Like,
I remember that. That's right. We did that in Sleep Spot. Thank you for saying that. After SIV's over, I think I'm going to do that in the INE group. I'm going to challenge everybody to just do a short little Facebook Live video.
No, I think it's true. I think it's important because it gets people to try and it gets their first, you know, it was really good. Because then they can cheat like I did. First of all, I couldn't get on. Then I just said, oh my God, I just recorded it and then I put it on. But then you could record it and see if you liked it and then put it up.
And see if you like
baby
it. Right.
You take baby steps.
Because you have a message. Every single one of us has a message. And your message is going to be different than mine, and you're going to resonate with people that I may not resonate with. And we all have that message. And a lot of times, I know I do it. I look around and go, oh, look, 8 years ago when I first started doing this stuff online, nobody else was doing it. Now look at all these people. They don't need me anymore. But the truth of the matter is you do, because I have a different slant than other people, and other people have a different slant than me. And there's billions of people in this world, right? How many people? What's the world population? Huge number. And of those people, even just in the U.S. alone, but we have people on this call from other countries. We have somebody from Mexico. We had somebody from where is that place? Kim, like over in, by India. We have people in this program from all over the world. But the point is that even if you just looked at America and the population of the whatever 2.2 billion people, million people, well, I don't even know the numbers anymore. I know when I lived in New York, there were 16 million in New York alone. But there's a lot of people in this country. And of those, a tiny, tiny fraction of them know how to take care of themselves, know how to eat to prevent diabetes, know how to eat to prevent heart disease, know how to eat to have energy. Very small percent. So when you look around and you go, oh, there's so many health coaches, they it's too much competition for me. That's a bunch of BS because there's so many. Like people say to me, my friends who are also practitioners, like, why do you teach this stuff to practitioners? You're going to create competition for yourself. Like, honey, what world do you live in?
I know.
There's
I was in Hawaii, and then I didn't want to come home, and I was in Vegas. And I actually was talking to the girl at the front desk that has thyroid condition, endometriosis, I mean, all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I wrote down your name, Tom O'Brien, Dr. Anna Gabecka. I go, look at all these webcasts. I go, but go see Dr. Rivera. She was so excited. She never even heard of you. She knew who was the woman that does the is it Wentworth or Wentz? Something. She's a thyroid person.
Oh, Isabella Wentz, yeah.
Yeah,
she only knew of her.
So I gave her all this other information to go and look up, and she was just like looking at me like her mouth was like, how do you know all this stuff?
There's so many people that don't. When you look at some of these summits, like she did this great job of getting it out there and really getting out and doing great marketing, and she got like 500,000 people. half a million people is a drop in the bucket compared to the number of people in this world, right? How many more people do we need to reach? Tom O'Brien did his big, you know, betrayal summit. And I love these summits. But, and I keep saying, oh, I don't need to do a summit. Everybody's doing summits. There's too much work. And, you know, there's so many more people we need to reach.
Yeah. And then they gravitate towards different people. So it's like, I love seeing you on the summits. I try to go as much as many as I can, but I always come back to you.
Well, thank you. Yeah. So, you know, that's a half a million people, and that's a lot of people. And Tom O'Brien, same thing. He was trying to reach a million. I think he might have made it to, you know, half a million or 700,000 or some number. But even if he made it to a million people on one summit, that's a drop in the bucket. Population, let alone the whole country.
And then if he just started and he just reached that person, that's the first seed that was planted for that person.
Exactly. And they go, oh, there's other things that we can do. Oh, I don't have to just go to my doctor and get T4 and I'm not doing well. So now they think I'm crazy and they want me on Prozac too. You know what I'm saying? People just think that's normal and they take it on themselves. Well, my doctor can't fix me. So it must be I must really be crazy. And when they're not. And so there's so much that we can educate people on. So getting out in your communities, in this program, and some of you are in CMDS as well. There's a presentation that I'm just giving you, my presentation, the slides. Just start with my slides. Use my slides exactly if you want to. I don't care. Take my name off of it and put your name on it. I don't care. Just for those ones I've given you. And then go out there and just do a presentation. And a lot of the folks in this program have been here, been before you, have done that, and they start to be seen in their community as the hormone expert. They're like, oh, I'm only a month into this program, and now I'm considered a hormone expert. But they are a hormone expert compared to these other folks. So don't be feeling like I'm not far enough along. Whether you're doing this as a profession or just doing it to help your family, there's so many people you can help. So I just want to get out there. That's why I work as hard as I do to get this stuff out there. Because I just want to see this world change. And I'm selfish because, you know, I look around and I see how much fighting there is, how much unhappiness there is. You know, and if people felt good, right, if people weren't depressed, if people didn't have gas all the time, if they didn't have headaches, if they weren't in pain, they would be happier. They wouldn't be cranky. They wouldn't be selfish and wanting their own way and fighting. And this world overall would be a much more happy, peaceful place.
Exactly.
So I think what we do in helping people is contributing to the global problem of world peace. And we can solve world peace better than any politicians and any UN representatives around and delegates and whatever else we have. We can do it by helping people to just actually feel better.
Yep, definitely.
So, my soapbox.
Thank you. I love you.
Thank you.
You're so awesome.
I love you. I'm so excited to get to see you next week. Bye-bye.
Good. All right, bye.
All right. So there we go. I'm looking again at the Q&A to see if anybody types in anything more. Okay, Q&A. There we go. I'll hit refresh. Whoops. Something screwy on my... I found there's a little crack on my computer screen. I'm like, it was acting funny. And then I had it on my desk, and I found that it slipped. It slipped off the desk because I tripped over the cord, and then the little tiny crack on my computer screen is now an obvious crack on my computer screen, and it's acting strange. So I keep clicking on things, and the mouse doesn't necessarily click, and the touch screen isn't working, and oh well. It is what it is. I'm going to go back. So I'm hitting control panel and getting back into the Q&A. Lynn, if you see any questions, go ahead and read them out loud to me as I make my way back. All right. See all questions.
There are two that I see. Yep. One's from Valerie.
Okay.
She says one thought for Margot.
Oh, good.
When taking a large number of supplements, excipients could be an issue. For example, magnesium stearate is a very common excipient and can be a problem for many people.
Yeah, thank you, Valerie, for reminding me of that. I should have pointed that out because a lot of the supplements, I looked at some of the brands, but I know some of the brands do have magnesium stearate in them. You were using a lot of the BioTrust stuff, and I think their stuff does have magnesium stearate in it. So that's a good point. That's a really good point. Thank you for that. And they interact, and yeah, they build up. Janine, will insulin, getting insulin imbalance help with fibroids and cysts? I mean, it could. You know, fibroids are tough. Cysts, like ovarian cysts, especially if it's something that's been diagnosed as polycystic ovarian syndrome, very much connected with insulin levels. So, but fibroids are tough. Fibroids come from an imbalance of progesterone and estrogen. Too much estrogen in comparison to progesterone, too much of the proliferative estrogens, like the estrone and estradiol compared to estriol, which is more of a protective one. It could be something called aromatase, excess aromatase, in which case the testosterone is being converted more to the estrogen. And in that particular case, a person might have low libido and low sex drive, low libido, low musculature, that they can't grow muscles, things like that, that indicate low testosterone, because their testosterone gets converted to estrogen, and then the estrogen throws off the estrogen-progesterone imbalance. So there's a lot of things could go on. But here's the thing. Remember, we talked about the ACEs, the adverse childhood events. If you were to do a search on fibroids and incest and childhood adverse effects in events, big connection. They found it a big connection there. So really healing the old wounds is huge when it comes to fibroids. Huge. Thank you for asking that. If you go to Dr. Warshawski has a book on healing fibroids, and that's what he talks a lot about, is the stress piece. We're always back to that stress piece. You must think I'm a broken record. But we keep getting back to those stresses. And he talks a lot about that in his book on healing fibroids. So it's Warshawski, Warshawski. A lot of the stuff that we teach, that I teach, you know, he has particular herbs and things. But, yeah, could be. Okay, so anything else? Oh, you guys couldn't hear Lynn when she was talking on Zoom? Yikes. I didn't know that. I can be somebody small, but my body thinks it's huge. Nora said, thanks for a great session. Margo said, I didn't quite catch the caps on something about magnesium. Yeah, excipients. So excipients like magnesium stearate, S-T-E-A-R-A-T-E, they're put in there as a binder and a flowing agent, and it can affect absorption. And, you know, if you just take one supplement within it, probably not a big deal, but if you're taking a lot of them, it could be getting you a lot of magnesium stearate and interfering with others. All right. Do you see anything else on the chat? I don't have my cursor's not working real well to go back to all of it, but I think these are from the beginning.
Let's see. So Janine says, so we need the Dutch test.
Yeah, I think that the Dutch answer test that, is a good thing. Yeah, I think the Dutch, especially in a case with fibroids and reproductive type of things, painful periods, menopause imbalances, you know, hot flashes, things like that. It's a very good test because, you know, somebody might have high estrogen, and they may even have a high estrogen progesterone ratio, but they are predominantly estriol, which is protective, and I'm not so concerned. Or their metabolites, their other metabolites, 4-hydroxy, 4-methoxy, estrone, estradiol, 16, and they're all different. They all have different functions or malfunctions in the body. 2 is more protective. 4 and 16 are less protective. 16 helps protect bones. So there's a lot to do there. And the Dutch test is amazing because they give you, in your interpretation, they give you links to various videos you can watch to explain it. So it's a practitioner's dream because you just get to learn so much from those tests.
Yeah, okay. I was watching some of the videos this weekend.
Okay, so we have to remember, I'm just going to, want to go through this. We have to remember when, if we're doing a joint call, we have to talk on the Instantel seminar that the Zoom is just for the, it's just for the screen here until we switch over, which we might do in the future, switch over.
Well, that's, I had both of them on and I was getting an echo, like a double conversation from you, but it wasn't so intolerable. So,
Oh, yeah.
Because I do not know of a way to be on Zoom and not have sound. Does that make sense?
Well, you just don't use it. You just
turn it off. Yeah,
you
but if I... I had myself muted.
Oh, you mean not hearing me on sound.
Right.
Yeah, if you're on both, yeah, that's an issue. I guess what you can do is put a headset in and then change the speaker to the headset, but don't have it in your ears. Like have it go there and have the other part. Like you can, anyway, it's complicated. We'll switch to using Zoom. We've started to switch over. We were concerned that we'd get more people. I can get up to 100 people on my Zoom line. And so I was concerned that with more than that number of people in this program that we might get everybody on at the same time and not be able to use the Zoom. But in reality, we don't usually get everybody on at the same time. So we probably could do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay,
all right.
I think that's it. The echo is because we're hearing me twice. That's it.
Yeah.
That's why. I wasn't thinking that.
Well, it just means we got more information.
You got me twice. Double the pleasure, double the fun. Okay, let me think on that. And let's think about for the next call. We'll just change it over. From Instant Teleseminar to Zoom. It's just easier to use one platform instead of two. We just started using Zoom at the end of last year, and we're just gradually switching things over. I like it much better. But the one thing I do like about Instant Teleseminar is it gives us immediate access to the call, and it posts it so somebody can just actually play the replay, whereas with Zoom we have to download it and then post it on our website or, you know, give somebody a link. So it's an extra step, but it's not that much. I just have to remember to do it because it records on my computer.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. And Margo says, got to get back to my kids, so thank you.
Oh, Margo, thank you for being on so long. I really appreciate your attention, and I know that that's a lot of work to have 12 kids. Holy cow. I have, yours oldest is 25, my oldest is 23, my youngest is 19, and that's it. Right. And I think about it like I have my 23-year-old, and then I also had an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old and a blah, 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 all the way down to three. I think I'd go batty. I certainly wouldn't be doing all this work I'm doing.
So,
power to you, Margo, but make sure you prioritize your self-care. I'm sure you love them. They are your world. They would be my world too. Mine are. And I just want you to pat yourself on the back. And know that you're a very
absolutely.
Special woman. And I'm getting teary-eyed because you're very special to be able to do that and to be able to be that unselfish. And I want you to make sure that you're also prioritizing your self-care, because the more energy you have, the more you're going to be able to take care of them. So good for you. Good for you. All right. Great, Margo.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
All right.
Bye. We'll open the line.
Bye.
Say goodbye. Can you open the lines? It takes me a while because of this stupid
cursor.
Yeah, just open it to go to open.
Yep, pardon.
And let everybody say hi. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
There we go. Bye.